morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, President Bush prepares for what may be his ultimate test, answering questions from a press corps that the White House has handpicked and intimidated. Is he up for it? Plus, we'll have our exclusive peek at the President's Day Planner. That's coming up. But right now, I am joined by Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron. Good morning.
Hey, Riley. What's happening? Hi, Sue. How are you?
Good.
Did I just say that like it was a happy day? Welcome to class. Hey, you know, I know that there's a lot of things going on in the world, but how about a little bit about me? How about a little bit Mark time?
All right.
I get this email from my buddy Ron Zimmerman, right? It's forwarded. It says that Jew is a derogatory term, that you shouldn't use the word Jew, all right? That, you know, Jews, even when you call yourself, if I go, I'm a Jew, that means that I'm it's derogatory. You know what I mean?
That's what my mother taught me.
Okay, no, she said, did she tell you to call Jews Jew?
No, she said call Jews.
But not unlike, you know how it's okay for black people to call themselves nigger, but it's not okay for Jews apparently now to say Jew. That's what he's, that's his issue.
Oh, that's his thing. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and it all started with a petition, you know, that to go to Google.com and do a search on the word Jew, and apparently you go to this place called Jew Watch. So I had to do it. I went to Jew Watch. It's like keeping an eye on Jews around the world.
This what?
It's a real website. It's right here. Jew Watch. Keeping a close watch on Jewish communities and organizations worldwide. Jew Watch is a not-for-profit library for private study, scholarship, and research. So they've got all these different like places where you can go, like Jewish communist rulers and killers, Jewish Zionist Soviet anti-American spies, Jewish genocides today and yesterday, Jewish hate groups. There is so much. Someone was obsessed to the point where this catalog is mind-blowing. So I, of course, went to the entertainer section, Jewish entertainers. They have got everybody from the history of entertainment. Everybody. They've got Jesus listed here as an entertainer, okay? Now, no, I'm not lying.
But they've therefore got people proving the people's point that you really have taken over Hollywood. In fact, the world, Mark.
I know that, but I mean, that's a given, and there's no problem that I have with that. You know what I mean?
world domination is your goal, in fact.
No, what I'm upset about is, dude, where's Mark Maron's name on this list of 900? Where is Mark Maron on the big Jew entertainer hate list? They've got people here that no one has ever heard of.
Mark, right? You're doing your best to get on it. Don't worry.
I am getting on it, Sue. But what I'm saying is that there are people, they've got the Dictators on here. The band The Dictators, which were a New York City punk rock band in 1981, that no one even cares about that much. They're listed as a group on here. The Dictators, all right? Hold on. Ted Koppel, yeah, all right, so what? All right, there's people on here. Chaim Topol, tough one, huh? How would you know? That guy's a Jew. But you know, Mark Maron, nothing. I just saw one on here.
Is that alphabetical, by the way?
Paul Kossoff. All right, do you know who Paul Kossoff is?
No.
He was the guitar player for the band Free. Do you know who the band Free was? Free was the band Paul Rogers was in before he was in Bad Company. All right? Do you know Paul Kossoff died of a heroin overdose at 22? No one cares about that guy. I mean, he played a great lead on It's All Right Now, you know, but no one really cares about Paul Kossoff. But this dude, some sort of weird rock trivia Jew hater, puts him on the big list. And there's comics on here. Where's Mark Maron's name? Nowhere. But I'm telling you one thing, if you are a Jew, it would behoove you to go to this website because you can actually learn things you never knew.
And let me tell you something, yeah. The webmaster, as we speak, is making room for your name.
Well, thank God. I mean, I want to, like, Uri Geller, Ellie, Pauly Shore, Sarah Jessica Parker is not Jewish.
Uh-oh.
And she's on this list.
Mark, if you're feeling better, I'm just starting a list now, okay? And I'm putting you at the very top.
See, I knew you were anti-Semitic. I felt that. It's part of it.
You can't win with him, sir.
Boris Karloff.
You absolutely cannot.
Boris Karloff. Larry
Karloff. Anti-Semitic. I thought it was anti-Semitic.
Efren Zimbalist Jr. Efren Zimbalist Jr. is on this list. Where's Mark Maron? And I don't know what the point of lists like this are, really. What is the point of it? So you can hate retroactively? It's like, God, I thought I liked that guy's songs, but you know what? I don't. Because he's a Jew. That ruined it. It took it all away. This site, and the petition is to get the site taken off, and I think the site should remain up, and all Jews should go there and just learn how incredibly successful we've been in almost every area of culture, politics, business, and the arts. It's an incredible testament to the Jews' success at being able to really get things done in the world.
How's the sports section doing?
There's probably a few in there. Hold on. I'll look it up.
Hey, go ahead. Bird.
Why don't you do your little news thing, and I'll look for the sports thing.
Thing while you look that up.
While you do the heavy stuff.
President Bush will hold a rare, and I mean really, really rare, news conference tonight. The decision to actually take questions, even from people who have incentive not to anger the White House, has nothing to do with President Bush's standing in the polls, we are told. Instead, he plans to address the problems the U.S. is facing in Iraq and the findings of the September 11th commission. Today, the panel will hear from former FBI Chief Louis Freeh and the man who now oversees the FBI, Attorney General John Ashcroft. In his remarks yesterday about September 11th, Mr. Bush said the FBI was not at fault.
They included the fact that the FBI was conducting field investigations, which comforted me. You see, it meant the FBI was doing its job.
Aww.
The FBI was running down any lead.
No, he was comforted. The little president man was comforted. It comforted me to know.
That was my favorite news headline of the day, actually, in the New York Times. Bush sees need for reorganizing U.S. intelligence. It's like, no kidding, so do I.
Yeah, but wait, there's more. He also pointed out that September 11th was the FBI's fault.
Whoever was the acting FBI director, had they found something, would have said, Mr. President, we have found something that you need to be concerned about in your duties to protect America. That didn't happen.
In case you didn't notice. Like, you know what I mean? In case, like, it was unclear to you that something was happening in the subversive, weird, subterranean world of the global terrorist industry.
That's quite telling, his whoever was the FBI director. I think if we asked him, he probably wouldn't know.
It's his fault, whoever that was.
But that was Louis Freeh at that time, right?
Yeah. I call him Lou.
Yeah, well, forgive me. I called him Louis just now, and I shouldn't have. His name is Louis.
I like people that have Louis. It's a cuter name for a guy that's got a dark job.
So you said that the president has mentioned that intelligence might need reform. Any specifics there?
Well, they've gone on and on ever since.
He has a little problem. We've lost a couple towers and 3,000 people down the street.
Well, Condoleezza Rice said last week that, you know, she saw structural problems and that people have known for ages. People have known since there was a leak that an FBI guy in Phoenix, you know, pointed out that there were problems. There's been evidence and anecdotes for absolutely months, not to say the last 2 years or more, that the intelligence agencies communicate really badly.
They didn't even know they had a bureau in Phoenix.
Oh, by the way, the acting director of the FBI was Thomas Picard, who I believe is also in front of the 9/11 panel. If remember, yeah.
Thomas Picard?
Thomas Picard. Now, I have no idea who he is.
Is he flying the 9/11 panel?
They're on an all-out assault to try to pin everything on the FBI.
And they're going
to
take the hit, aren't they?
I don't think so.
What do you mean? What are they going to do? They're going to say, look, we got information on you guys. All right, so, you know, lay off and, you know, take, you know, shoulder your part of the burden. Are they going to do that?
I don't know. I'm just distressed. They did a better job checking me out for my green card than they seem to do on terrorism.
Really? Did you get your green card? How long did it take you?
I did. It only took a few months.
Did you have to marry one of us to get one?
Not quite that bad, Mark. I didn't want a green card that desperately.
We don't want any more English immigrants here. They cause nothing but trouble. Send back Eddie Izzard. Send him back. You know what I mean? He's a hack and a dress. Send him back.
Oh, my goodness. You know, there's new Gallup polling. It seems like every day there's another poll, whether it's Gallup or Newsweek or this one or CBS News, New York Times, whatever. Now the current Bush approval rating, 52%. It's been hovering between 49 and 52, actually, since the end of January. His quarterly average approval rating. Why does it sound like radio ratings or something?
Oh,
very
yeah.
Strange. Anyway, 50% is the lowest of his presidency for a quarter, and that's out of 13 different quarters. Satisfaction rate. State of the country, 41%. Economic confidence rating, 34%. And, of course, when Bush and Kerry go head-to-head, they are tied, which, of course, evaporates the 7-point lead that Newsweek gave them just yesterday.
This is how bored I am with polls. When I saw that, I read the headline as Bush and Kerry are statistically tired. And then I realized it, in fact, said tied.
Well, you know...
What are those numbers, though? All numbers are coercive. I mean, what is a poll? How can anyone base anything on it? It could be a poll of four people, could be a poll of two people, could be a poll of 12 people.
No, they always give you the number,
and they give you the
sort of error
the
average,
minus,
and they
should
say plus or minus
the
what
average?
They give error. They say we did a poll on 1,000 people, and then there's a percentage it's like plus or minus.
But do they, like, how do they do it? Do they run into movie theaters and go, okay, everyone got a minute? Anyone got a minute? Fill out this piece of paper. I've been called once, but it was never for political poll.
I don't think they would call you twice.
No.
What do you mean? I'm a sociable guy.
Yeah,
I got
right.
nothing to do during the day. I've talked to these people. I have helped people. I've reached out.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well,
congratulations to you, by the way, Mr. Marin.
About what? Reaching out?
Would we call Mark twice? I don't know about that.
But look at the poll. Like, how come they don't ask real
okay,
questions?
Okay, well, still ahead. Mark Maron has our exclusive peek inside the President's Day Planner and the return of perhaps the most important woman in President Bush's life, right here on Air America.
Air America Radio.
A new kind of yada yada yada.
Hello, it's Mark Maron. It is now 21 past the hour, 49 seconds, 50 seconds, 51 seconds. Set your clocks, people. And it's time for our exclusive look into the President Bush's day planner for Tuesday, April 13th. Can I just say, Chris Sound Guy, Sylvain, the guitar player for the New York Dolls, on the Jew list. The guitar player for the New York Dolls. All right, here we go. Presidential day plan. 10 a.m. Sweep until mid-morning. Unwind from last week's vacation in Crawford. 10:30. Plan next week's vacation. 11 a.m. Confirm what White House press corps has all received scripts for tonight's press conference. Noon. Table reading with White House press corps for tonight's press conference. 1 p.m. Rehearsal and run-through for press conference. 3 p.m. Dress rehearsal. Press corps should have scripts memorized. 5 p.m. Tech rehearsal. 6 p.m. Call Roger Ailes to pre-approve Brett Hume, Fred Barnes, and Mort Condrake's post-press conference analysis. 8:30, showtime. That's it.
How about he gets one of those focus group planner. Things and then redoes the ending if they don't like it?
Go whitehouse.gov. And I think they'll take your email. We can suggest that. I think it's a fine suggestion.
I think it's a good idea. You know, this is turning out to be a day of rarities, a news conference by our commander-in-chief, an apology by a Supreme Court justice, and the return of the prodigal daughter. Justice Antonin Scalia and the erasure of tape ended up being a story with legs. He wrote a letter last Friday to the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. For those of you who haven't been following the story, a federal marshal apparently told a reporter who had run tape on Justice Scalia's speech before a group of Mississippi high schoolers to erase the tape, which the reporter ended up doing. And the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press has released Justice Scalia. I assume that it was them, but they released a letter from Justice Scalia. I guess kind of saying sorry for this particular incident. I'm going to read you
but
some
of
it. But
with the emphasis on the kinda. It was two reporters, I think.
Yeah. Says, thank you for your facts of April 8th expressing well-justified concern over the incident at Presbyterian Christian School in Hattiesburg last Wednesday. You are correct that the action was not taken at my direction. I was as upset as you were.
That's hard to imagine.
Blaming the intelligence community again. Blaming the cops. That's what these guys are doing. All they're doing is blaming the cops. It's the cop who did it. The marshal's fault. I had nothing to do with that. He's acting on his own volition.
Justice Scalia continues, I have written to the reporters involved extending my apology and undertaking to revise my policy so as to permit recording for use of the print media.
And again, I want to say I got a bootleg of that that recording. I've also got some rare Jerry Garcia stuff. And Paul Kossoff. I got a few Paul Kossoff leads that no one knows about.
You really do?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. By the way, in parentheses, he says, that policy will, as you say, promote accurate reporting so that no one will quote me as having said people just don't revere the Constitution like they used to. So this is in response to a specific charge made against Scalia.
But he just quoted himself, right? And no one will quote me, but you can quote it right off that letter, right?
Quote me as having
said. Oh, okay.
Isn't this letter called Having Your Cake and Eating It? When he sort of backtracked and apologized, but he said that he didn't actually give the direction that the tape should be confiscated, but he makes it known fairly clearly that he doesn't want anybody recording him.
You would think, yeah, and you would think that, like, the federal marshal or whoever it was wouldn't have done it if they hadn't thought Scalia would have approved.
But they also, he's like a guy who doesn't let people tape him on videotape.
He doesn't want to be on TV. He doesn't like the electronic media covering him.
I think what Justice Scalia is really dealing with is a certain amount of insecurity. I think he doesn't like seeing himself on television. I think he's uncomfortable with it. You know, maybe he doesn't like hearing himself on tape. I mean, Riley, you don't listen to yourself.
No.
When I see myself on television, it takes me two or three, times to really, love me.
But, when I listen to tapes of this show...
We're supposed to believe that.
Absolutely. I'm like, deeply insecure. And I think that's what Scalia
is.
I think he's deep. Hey, look, okay, this is a guy who doesn't like to be, videotaped. He shoots birds. What kind of guy shoots birds?
You're absolutely right. She's back.
Who?
Karen Hughes.
Oh, man.
You remember her?
I saw her on TV the other day.
President Bush's former mouthpiece who left the White House in 2002 to spend more time with her family. Well, family time is
over.
She's back. She's defending her boss. Who else? To anyone and anyone who will listen. All over the country. I think she was out in Pasadena the other day.
She's so in love with him.
But it's good that, she has a book out, so
yeah.
What a perfect opportunity. But that was so predictable. We knew.
Everybody's using this administration to sell books. It's unbelievable.
It is.
Well, I noticed that no one in the administration has complained that Karen Hughes has profited from her time in the White House to make money from a book, which is what they accused Richard Clark,
the former
anti-terrorism chief, of doing.
What's the name of her book, anyway?
10 Minutes from Normal.
I thought it was called Den Mommy.
Yeah, right.
Isn't it?
My Life with George?
Bootleg copy that you're circulating.
Yeah. She is sort of a den mother, though. I guess they're all happy that somebody is, back
overjoyed.
In charge.
Absolutely overjoyed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But 10 Minutes from Normal, it comes from when she was on the campaign trail on a train with Bush during the election campaign.
Leading to the election test.
And that someone said, where the heck are we? Because they'd been traveling for ages and somebody else piped up, 10 Minutes from Normal. And according to her, I saw her on the Tim Russert show 2 weekends ago. She said, that's what I'm going to call my book. If I ever write one.
But do these people really write books, or aren't they, ghost-written?
Ghost-written, some of them.
Often they're written. I don't know about hers, actually.
I mean, I know Clinton is writing his own book. I know. And I know that some people do write their own books, but it seems like if they are left to their own devices, they take an awful long time to finish them.
See, you were determined to do that no matter what. That's what I like about you, Mary.
Yeah.
You got skills. You got stones.
She's the perfect person to bring in for damage control because she's perfectly badly dressed.
Mm-hmm.
She charms journalists. I mean, Tim Russert was not very combative with her. Every time
it's hard to charm
question,
Tim Russert.
Yeah.
My God, that guy's a wuss.
Every time he asked her a tough question, she would smile and then immediately launch into that. Well, I remember when, and there was some,
and the music would come up.
Sort of anecdote that if she was sharing a unusual personal memory just with Tim and the, hundreds of thousands of viewers.
Yeah.
Does he have hundreds of thousands of viewers?
I don't know.
I don't know what he has. I've watched him interview a couple people, and he really doesn't press very hard. You know what I mean? They're all, patting each other on the back. It's all big game to them. You know what I mean? Even our producer, John. these guys.
You said it wrong, man.
Jonathan, I'm sorry. I've been reprimanded.
Straighten yourself out.
He said, John isn't even my name.
But
he said, it's not even my name.
That's right.
People find it harder to be tougher to a woman. They still do.
Still to come, Pulitzer Prize winner Ron Suskind on his book, The Price of Loyalty. Mark Maron has the Morning Business Report and the Salon.com story of the day. But first, news headlines on the half hour.
America Radio, here with Mark Maron and Mark Riley, and it's 32 minutes past the hour. It's time also for our Salon.com story of the day.
Salon.
Okay, guys, Salon. It's now 32 minutes and 16 seconds. Salon, if you listened closely to National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice's testimony before the 9/11 panel last week, you might remember an excerpt of hers. It became noteworthy with the release of the August 6th 2001 presidential daily briefing, which included recent information on possible Al-Qaeda attacks in the U.S. That was news to lots of people because of the following statement from Rice about that presidential daily briefing. I'm going to do my Condi impersonation now. It did not warn of threats inside the United States. It was historical information based on old reporting. There was no new threat information. Okay, keyword, historical. Joining us now to help us figure out what she was saying is Salon.com's Sean Weilance.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Okay, I am baffled over this use of historical. I thought that Dr. Rice, who is the former provost of Stanford University and has training as a historian and has written books supposedly about history, the study of Russia and the Czech army after 1948, how come she's bandying around historical like that?
Yeah, it's it beats me too, because her sense of what history might be, or historical information, as she puts it, doesn't jibe with what a historian does. You know, historical information, at the most simple-minded level, is simply information in a document about something that happened in the past. But a historian, that's only where a historian starts. There are all sorts of clues, information, which when put into context with other documents tells you a great deal about something that happened before that document was written and afterwards.
Okay, clues. Now that's pretty important, isn't it? Because this was the document, this presidential daily briefing was the one that the White House did not want to release.
Yeah.
They were pressured by the 9/11 Commission to do so. Finally did on Saturday, so that meant it was in Sunday, the weekend's papers, so hardly anybody noticed it because it's a holiday weekend.
Yeah.
And the document said there were over 70 investigations relating to bin Laden that were actually ongoing at the time. Now,
right.
How come they missed the clues?
Well, look, there are two things going on here. One is the fact that when Dr. Rice appeared before the commission last week, she said that there was only historical information, or implied as much, when in fact there wasn't. There was plenty of current information in there, not only about those FBI investigations, but about cells in the country at the time, casing buildings in New York City. There was plenty of stuff that was very much up to date. So that's number one, the mischaracterization under oath.
So you're saying she mischaracterized or she was lying?
Well, she mischaracterized it. I don't know that. I'd have to go back over the tape. It's not for me to say that, but it was certainly misleading, at the very least.
I think we've just found the tape. Should we listen to it a moment?
Sure.
Maybe we have. There it is.
Inside the United States, it was historical information based on old reporting. There was no new threat information.
So, Sean, how skilled a historian is Condoleezza Rice?
Yeah, I mean, she was mischaracterizing it. But more than that, yes, even if above and beyond that, I mean, she parsed it well. She said there was no new threat information, so there was nothing in the thing that said there's a direct plot going on. But in fact, there was plenty of current information. So,
isn't she sort of a hack?
Well,
I mean, honestly, wasn't she accused of stealing?
What?
I don't know about that.
In her historical book.
Her book got very bad reviews across the board. You know, it's just not a particularly good, strong piece of work, more ideological than historical.
So she's a propagandist.
Yeah, that's more or less the implication of the reviews. Sure.
And this administration has very little respect for historical context.
Well, as I said in the piece, the first President Bush, when challenged about the Willie Horton stuff after the election in 1988, said, well, that's history.
They dismiss it like that's old news, like the election being stolen.
Exactly. Old news is old news. Get over it. Well, there's some of that same kind of dismissiveness in this whole business.
Yeah.
It's not just that the information, historical information, was buttressed by stuff that was current. That's the first problem. The second problem is, what do you do with the information that is historical?
Well, if these guys rewrite history, they're really no different than a fascist regime, aren't they?
Well, what I'm saying is, what she did is, take this historical information and assume that it had no relevance to the present. That's crazy.
So she filtered it in order for whatever was going on to be allowed to happen.
For whatever reason, yeah. I mean, and beyond that, you see, there's two problems here. One is what they did on August 6th, 2001.
Yeah.
But
the other,
sorry.
But the other problem is what they're doing today.
Which is,
you know, prevaricating, stonewalling, not telling the entire truth about what happened. Having to drag this thing out, as you say, releasing it on a holiday weekend. They're trying to cover up in some way. They're trying to hide something about what happened back then.
I'm trying to figure out something, and it's kind of, it leaves me very curious.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI was involved in 70 investigations related to bin Laden, yet it appears now that Bush is putting the weight for not delivering intelligence to him on the FBI. How
right.
do you square that?
Well, it's passing the buck. I mean, you know, if those 70 things were going on, why the heck didn't he then realize that you should call together the principals and have a meeting and put pressure on people to pull things together? I mean, that's the real question. So it's very easy to pass on to the FBI and say, and the FBI did make all kinds of mistakes. But, you know, the buck stops somewhere, and he is the head of the government, not the head of the FBI.
Sean, it seems that they have a bit of a sort of a relative approach to what counts as history and what does not, because, you know, Dr. Rice and the rest of the administration have used much older information to justify actions they took against Iraq. So when is something history and when is it not history?
Exactly. Well, you hit exactly the right point. They can dismiss history when they want to. They can make it as loud as anything, as a loudspeaker when they want to. And that's what's so troubling about this.
This is the problem in a very new country when you've only been going for less than 200 years.
Well, I suspect the Prime Minister of Great Britain would do the same kind of thing. Maybe not so harshly, but so obviously. But yes, I mean, I think that is part of the problem. There is a kind of idea built into American life that if it's history, it's old, it doesn't matter. That's a prejudice, a deep built-in prejudice.
It doesn't help also that there's so much information available that you can almost choose, you know, which history you want to use for your little, you know, your personal context.
Well, you can, but then again, you see, what's so amazing about this is that this is a document that the president saw.
Right.
This isn't just one of a million things. It's very direct. It's very clear. And there was so much more information confirming it that was out there. I mean, that's the point about putting a document in context. I mean, Dr. Rice has been hearing all summer long that something terrible was going to happen, as she testified, something big, something awful. It's clear that something terrible was taking shape on August 6, 2001. What's disturbing was the passivity thereafter when given that particular document.
What do you think needs to be done? What do you think needs to be, you know...
What could he have done? He could have certainly called the principals together. He could have certainly told everybody from the FAA on up and down to look into this, find out all information they have about this, and get back to him in a week. That's the first thing they could have done. Now, am I saying that would have stopped the attacks on September 11th? I have no idea. I mean, you know, I don't want to pin this completely on him, but the fact was they didn't do anything. He went back on vacation. That's embarrassing. Terribly embarrassing, when in fact, in this president's daily brief, both New York City and Washington are specifically mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Weilentz, thank you so very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Sean Weilentz is the Dayton Stockton Professor of History at Princeton University and the author of the forthcoming book, The Rise of American Democracy, From Jefferson to Lincoln. Check out his column on Salon.com today. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you, Professor. Give us a call here at Air America. That's 866-303-AARZERO. If you don't want to use the the letters, try 866-303-2270. We'll put you on the line right here on Air America.
America Radio. Quiet commentary, top of our lungs.
It is 45 minutes past the hour, and we're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR-0. I was spelling out zero, you guys. I'm such an idiot. I'm sorry. You got to dial actual zero, AAR-0, or 866-303-2270. I'm sitting here reading it, AARZERO. Yeah, there's 12 numbers in this. Now, you know, what if I... Retarded? All right. Anyways, first it's time for the morning's edition business report. Ah, there's the Wall Street Bell. All right, the opening bell, and that means it's time for the morning business report. Today, big news is that it's business as usual in Iraq. Rocket-propelled grenades aside, the good folks at Hyundai have opened a showroom in Iraq, conveniently located just past the smoking crater. Look for the giant inflatable gorilla with his hands flapping right behind the razor wire. People get that outside of New York. In New York, we don't have any of the flapping air puppets. All right. Assistant General Manager Nahad Abdul Crazy Rahman said they've already sold 38 Hyundais, but no coupes. Iraqis seem to prefer the cheaper models, leading some to suspect they're being used for target practice. Hyundais are great on gas mileage, ideal for a country where most fuel convoys come under machine gun fire. The Hyundai connection has already improved the business climate between Iraq and South Korea, while just the other day, Iraqis released all their South Korean hostages. The good news for the Bush administration is that Iraqis may develop a taste for freedom after they've experienced the freedom of driver's side airbags and rack and pinion steering. It's our business report for today.
All right.
From Morning Sedition.
38 Hyundais, huh?
Maybe they could pinch the Toyota line, but try and change it slightly. Have you driven anything lately?
Other than a bike with a bomb.
I looked on the website, though. The starting price for a Hyundai Sonata is $15,999. How are Iraqis going to afford that?
Credit.
Yeah, right.
Credit. It's all credit. They've got a new currency there. They've got the Halliburton 20, the Halliburton 50, and the Halliburton 5.
Anyway, there's a website at HyundaiUSA.com, and you can fill it in with your zip code and ask for a test drive. So I need anybody who is listening with an Iraqi zip code to call me up so I can fill it in and see when we get invited. Call me up with it. If you have an Iraqi zip code, I need you to call 1-866-303-2270 or 1-866-303-AAR0.
Dude, Elvis Presley, Jew. It's on the list on JewWatch.com. JewWatch.com, which is an anti-Semitic website that I've become obsessed with. It says Elvis Presley / Jewish maternal grandparent. Well, if that's the basis, I think maybe Hitler should be on this list. Didn't he have some Jewish blood?
He did,
I heard.
Yep.
Elvis Presley.
866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270. Why is everybody so afraid of Bill Clinton's book?
Oh, because I don't know if they're. I think they're afraid of it because they don't want the timing to screw up Kerry's run. Because they think that if Clinton's book comes out and it's as sordid and exciting as it possibly could be, it might distract people from Kerry's candidacy and his momentum. It might bring it back into the forefront.
The
people that hate Clinton still hate him.
Possibly, I think it's also they'll remember that Clinton was the last really charismatic big personality. Energetic Democrat we had.
Well, I think that's true too, but that would not stop people who hate him. I mean, really, I think it's concerned for people hating him.
Yeah, you know, he's calling people
I read that. He's calling his friends at home.
And reading passages from the book.
That's beautiful. He's just like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's go to Charlie in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Good morning.
How you doing?
What's
up?
Good judicious show, as usual. I got an article from Mark. I don't know if he caught it. Mark Maron.
Yeah.
Sunday's Times.
Yeah.
Mormon set to flout vow not to baptize deceased Jews.
Oh, that's nice of him.
Yeah, Mormons have continued to baptize Jewish Holocaust victims into their faith posthumously, despite having promised to discontinue the practice.
What, like those people haven't been through enough?
Yeah, well, they collect records from government worldwide documents, and they get church members to stand in for the deceased non-Mormons, a ritual the church says is required for them to reach heaven.
That's ridiculous. That's like necrophilia. That's like so disrespectful. Those poor people have been through enough. Now they got to be a Mormon in heaven?
Yeah.
But maybe they'll get Mark Feld, a.k.a. Mark Bolan of T-Rex in.
You went to the site.
No, I just know that.
Hey, I like Mark Bolan. That was the first guy I had a crush on.
He was a Jew.
I cried when Mark Bolan died.
He was a Jew.
Well, therefore, I guess, you know, good.
Bang a gong. Get it on.
Yeah, right on, man. So... But I guess that's one good thing, is that, you know, some of these Holocaust victims can now have several wives in heaven.
Yeah, right? But that's certainly more seditious.
Will, Michigan, what's up? Will, how you doing? Will, yeah, oh, no, I was going to Michigan, I'm sorry. We got William in Chappaqua.
In Chappaqua.
Hello.
Hello, William Chappaqua.
I just wanted to bounce a little bit of Chapter 3 off y'all.
The president.
The former president.
The former president. Yeah, well, we got...
How you doing, sir?
I'm all right. I just want to see how this runs by you.
How long is this going to take, buddy?
Shouldn't be no more than 15, 20 minutes. Half hour at the outside.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
All right, go ahead, man.
Ashley was now wearing only brief white panties.
Hey.
She had signaled her desire by removing her shirt and skirt and by leaning back on the couch.
Yeah.
She closed her eyes.
Uh-huh.
I think I can see where this is going, William.
Yeah, keep it going.
You have to hear it all together for it to really make sense.
I don't think so.
She was concentrating on nothing but Bill's tongue and lips. He gently teased her.
Wait. This is from Bill O'Reilly's book, isn't it? Like, he wrote a book. He wrote a novel, and I read excerpts from it. You're reading from Bill O'Reilly's book, aren't you?
Well, in my defense, he was at the same party. He comes in a couple paragraphs down at this actual event.
All right, so you were both there?
That's exactly right. I didn't want to exclude him once Ashley and I began.
You did a three-way with Bill O'Reilly?
Well, he took me to this particular party, and like that, like my mom always taught me, you dance with the one who brung you.
All right, look, well, excuse me, ex-president. Clinton, we'll be back with you for more of the reading. We're going to take a couple other calls. Why don't you find a part that maybe has something to do with politics?
Okay, remember, you can pre-order it at Amazon.com. Thank you very much,
guys. We appreciate it.
Ex-President Bill Clinton on the phone here at Air America. We got Will in Michigan. How are you, Will?
I'm doing all right.
What's on your mind, man?
Well, I just wanted to mention that I've noticed that the Bush administration seems to be taking the page right out of the Nazi playbook.
Yeah, many pages.
Hitler said it's easier to get the public to believe a big lie than a small lie.
Right.
And Hermann Göring said, tell the people they're under attack and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and putting the country under danger.
Exploiting fear in order to maintain power. Thanks a lot, Will. I appreciate that call.
By the way, you know what's going to happen next. And now someone's going to write an editorial or an op-ed piece about the fact that Air America Radio has been airing callers, not hosts, but callers, who call Bush a fascist, who liken America to a Nazi administration, and how rotten we are.
That's all right. So what? So what? So what, Riley? I mean, the truth of the matter is that some of the tactics...
I'm not saying there's anything wrong. I'm just saying this is be ready.
But now you're provoking them. The same people, yeah. But unfortunately, a lot of those people that you're talking about are too busy on JewWatch.com that they might have missed that last segment.
Let's give the number again. 1-866-303-AARO. That's 1-866-303-2270.
Robert Redford, Jew. According to this, Robert Redford.
Really?
Here's their research. Actor describes himself as half Jewish.
Are there any cartoon characters on that list?
I don't know. I haven't found it yet.
Bart Simpson.
I'll find one.
Let's go to Marilyn, who was calling us from Long Island.
Hi. Good morning, Mark, and Sue.
Hi, Marilyn.
How are you? I have a few, and he said I could mention all of them. I just started going through the New York Times today.
Mm-hmm.
Scalia apologized for the seizures of the wrecked recordings. It was not under his direction.
Right.
Yeah, we mentioned that earlier.
He blamed it. He blamed it on the police department.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the second thing is, GW woke up. Bush sees a need for reorganizing U.S. intelligence. He said that now may be the time to revamp and reform the intelligence services. Hello?
Yeah.
Where has he been?
Well, boy, he got the message. Interesting.
I guess so.
Marilyn, thank you.
He said I had a few more, and then I have my solution, which he said I could tell you.
Okay.
There's an article also in the Times about clear skies, no more for millions as pollution rule expands.
Uh-huh.
More millions are going to be affected.
Mm-hmm. Marilyn, are you working for the New York Times website?
No, I'm going through the New York the paper.
Ah.
And then,
well, we've already done that.
Okay. Well, did you also see in the section about retirement about the discount drug cards?
Oh yeah.
But do you know that how much a person is going to save a year?
How much?
After you take the $30 off.
Trick question.
About $13.50.
That's ridiculous. That's nothing. That's nothing.
I know.
Marilyn, we're up. We've been up 5 hours going through the paper. So anytime you want to call us and tip us off to anything,
Now, can I just give you my solution?
Did you know Elvis was Jewish?
Who?
Elvis.
Elvis?
Yeah.
I happen to be too. That's all right with me.
I'm Jewish as well, but I had no idea. Elvis Presley. His grandmother was Jewish.
But now I think you'll like my solution.
Okay.
I said this a long time ago, that Bush and Cheney should take the entire cabinet on a plane ride.
Yeah.
And just happen to fly over the Bermuda Triangle.
Wow.
And it will be God's will, and they aren't a guard. Isn't that great?
Are you sure that God is overseeing the Bermuda Triangle? I heard that was the devil.
Yeah.
Well, but God knows.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
Thank you, Marilyn.
So much.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Have a great day.
You too.
Let's go to George on Long Island.
George, what do you got on your mind?
Well, what I got on my mind, I think what everybody has in their mind, but in a different way. We know
your own unique George way.
Well,
all right,
if I can't speak for myself, who the hell's going to do it?
I'm with you.
But I think let me put it this way: one question that'll be faced that John Kerry will face.
Okay.
What are you going to do now? What will we do now? We know the terrible mess that exists in Iraq. It's very complex. It's probably maybe impossible to ever have what we call a democracy.
Right.
And I think what time has to be devoted by Kerry and other people like you or anybody else who studies the subject, what do we do? How do we handle this? My own personal view is that you can't fight terrorism block by block, individual by individual. Terrorism is financed. It's supported by the Arab nations.
It's supported by a lot of people in the guise of charities, and a lot of money is funneled through into the terrorists.
Yeah.
All right, but it's supported unless there is a real war between the fundamentalist Arabs who control the rest of the Arab nations, and the question is, how is it going to be handled?
It's a good question. I don't think anyone has even, made any sort of suggestions as to any new policy. I haven't heard that from Kerry yet as to,
No.
I don't even know what these people want. In terms of these terrorists. Does anyone know what they want?
They don't want the United States-led forces.
No, I understand that. I understand
Iraq.
That. But is that going to stop them from doing whatever it is that they do?
Is what going to stop them?
If the forces weren't in Iraq? I mean... I get it. Multinational.
Multinationalist.
Mark Bowman, Jew. You know who he was? Founder of the Turtles.
Oh. Coming up next, it's Law and Order time at the 9/11 hearings. Bush bumped Simon tonight. Are you upset? Plus, are soldiers in Iraq heroes? One commentator doesn't think so. All this and Recovery Corner when we continue here on Air America Radio.
Mom, can you take me to Supercuts?
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Hey, it's Mark Maron here, and today the man President Bush really doesn't want talking to his staffers. Plus, today's Recovery Corner, we're going to offer some words of hope to a struggling alcoholic we'll call George W. And for those of you who are just tuning in, I got an email from my buddy Ron Zimmerman earlier today, urging people to sign a petition against Google for Google to remove a link. When you go on Google and you put the word Jew in, you get JewWatch.com, which is an anti-Semitic website, but I found it to be very entertaining and informative. I've been going through some of a massive list of entertainers. A massive list, it's so specific and esoteric. Like, hey, Mick Green. Who's Mick Green, he asked. Well, he's a Jew, and he was also the rock guitarist with the Pirates. What?
The Pirates.
Let me clear it up for you. Johnny Kidd and the Pirates. Anything?
Johnny Kidd.
Nothing? How about Max Miller? Sue? Max Miller?
Yeah, I got all his stuff, yeah.
English music hall comedian. Nothing?
Love it.
All right, here's the other link, though. Within JewWatch.com, you can go to Jewish Mind Control. They have a list of Jewish mind control. I guess these are organizations, ideas. They have a Judaism, of course. Oh. They have Marxism, right? Socialism, communism, anarchism, liberalism, unionism, civil rights, homosexuality, a Jewish mind control idea, device.
Could
that even mean?
Can you click under there?
I can click on it as well. Do you want me to click on it?
No, I want you to click on it and see where you go with it.
I'll Colonel Clink on it. No, wait.
There's only one problem with all these emails going around, because I have one from friends in L.A. today telling you to do the same thing, is that when you do a search on Google, the website that comes up at the top is the one that gets the most hits.
Yeah.
So it's the most looked at website. So now with sending this memo around telling everybody to petition Google, everybody is going to click onto this website.
That's great. I think that all Jews should go to the website and see what an amazing testament to success, ambition, and brilliance the Jews have been throughout history. I mean, I didn't finish it. It's homosexuality, Freudianism, atheism, here's the one that kills me, relativity, a Jewish mind control trick. The truth about time, you know? Secular humanism, psychology, psychiatry, diversity. Did you know that
diversity
was a scam, an incredible Jewish mind control conspiracy that all people be sort of different and come from different races and that we'd have to tolerate that, those Jews? Why don't they just put the Ten Commandments on here, in the New Testament for that matter? Man. All right.
Okay.
Am I all worked up again?
Yeah.
I'll look up the homosexuality thing, though, Mark. I will do that. I'm going to clink on it.
Yeah, please.
All right, Sue, what do you got?
Oh, just some politics. After having said that the presidential daily briefing he got on August the 6th, 2001 was too vague for him to take steps to ward off an attack, the president yesterday was asked whether he requested any follow-up information from the FBI, which might have given him the specifics he needed. And here's what he said.
I'm confident that had they found something that was a direct threat to America, they would have brought it to my attention.
Bush's remarks were historical in the sense that this is believed to be the first time passive aggressiveness has been an explicit part of defense or intelligence policy. Mr. Bush may be asked about this approach tonight when he holds a rare news conference. Now, I don't know if any of you guys saw what I saw last night, but when he told people he was going to give a press conference, which he rarely does, he's the least press conference-giving president we've ever had.
Yeah.
He tossed off this ridiculous, why not, see you at the East Room. I mean, who does he think he is? Mae West? Come up and see me sometime? They hardly do anything at the East Room. It's reserved for formal events, and only two of his 11 press conferences have ever been held there. One, which was on October the 11th after the September 11th attacks, and another on March the 6th last year before the U.S. allies invaded Iraq. So I don't really appreciate this very cavalier, why not see you at the East Room, guys?
He's trying to convince people that he really, you know, has no problem with doing this when everybody knows he has a huge problem with doing it.
I think that's exactly it. I think he's just trying to like act like, hey, we all knew about it wasn't our fault. You know, things happen.
Yeah.
He is so cut off from reality. This week he has said that the uprising in Iraq is, a handful of thugs or some gangs, he called them. It's far bigger than that. I mean, they're discussing sending in more troops, tens of thousands more troops, people who are supposed to be rotated out and not. They're staying behind.
Yeah, I think he's trying to do that sort of like daddy knows best kind of thing. Don't you worry, kids. We got it all under control. It's just a little problem. It's a little glitch. You know, pretty soon democracy will sprout.
When's he going to acknowledge this has actually been the bloodiest week, the bloodiest fighting in Iraq since Saddam Hussein was kicked out a year ago?
But that's what he did that already. He did that Sunday when he said it was a tough week.
Yes, but not in his exactly. It was a tough week.
That's for as whom? Far as he
not
goes.
Not for the guy who spent a week on his run.
Is he supposed to get out there and go, it was a tough week, man. A lot of people are dead. There's body parts all over the place. Man.
But you have to consider his tone is not exactly fitting with what's going on out there.
He sounds incredibly goofy,
but it's smug, it's glib, he sounds smug, he sounds as though he's not taking it seriously.
I'd like to take a lottery on how many questions he will actually be asked during the course of this news conference.
Well, how many he'll answer correctly.
Well, that'll be slim or none. That'll be like one or two at best. Joining us now by telephone from his home in Washington, D.C. is Ron Suskind. He is the best-selling author of The Price of Loyalty, George W. Bush, The White House, and The Education of Paul O'Neill. Good morning.
Hey, how are you guys?
All right, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for writing that book, man.
Yeah, really. Your book talks about Paul O'Neill, a guy who had worked in government for a period of time, going back to the Ford administration, a guy who had turned around Alcoa,
yep.
For better, for worse, I guess for better. As
well, very much for better, yep.
Yeah. And he seems to have walked right into this, like, yawning wilderness when he decided to go back and serve in the Bush White House.
Well, it's interesting because O'Neill, all the way back to Richard Nixon, O'Neill was beloved in Republican circles. Dick Cheney's introduced him as the smartest man I know for almost 30 years. And what's interesting about O'Neill is that when he arrives in government, he has this idea, which he has actually pushed forward for a good decade or so at Alcoa, which is utterly heretical to the way this administration operates. And it is simply sunlight. He believes in openness in government. He believes in openness in all sorts of activities, in corporate life and public life. And essentially, this trust of truth, you know, put it all on the table, let's see the facts, you know, rigorous process, strong analysis, these are principles that, frankly, have worked for both Democrats and Republicans, you know, makes him very dangerous to this administration. They kind of didn't know this when he arrived. And the idea that such a zealot about transparency, so-called, would enter Dick Cheney's dome of silence is just an extraordinary kind of collision, a kind of mishap.
You're telling me they didn't know this about him and
nope.
Him and Cheney were boys?
No, they didn't really know this part. They knew he was brilliant. They knew he was kind of the big ideas man in the Republican Party. And they knew he had extraordinary results at Alcoa. Alcoa was the best performing company of the 1990s. But they didn't realize that O'Neill really believed in this idea of open process, that secrecy is almost never defendable. That's O'Neill's opinion. You know, he agrees with Pat Moynihan, O'Neill and Moynihan were buddies, the New York senator, that most secrecy, as we term it in this government, is good old-fashioned butt covering.
Interesting point. We got to take a quick break. We'll have more with Ron Suskind, author of The Price of Loyalty, George W. Bush, The White House, and The Education of Paul O'Neill. This is Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. Now with dangerous levels of lead.
It is now 20 past the hour. We're talking with Ron Suskind, author of The Price of Loyalty, about ex-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill. Hey, I need to ask you, Ron, what do you think is going to happen with the intelligence with Ashcroft and Reno and what's going to happen at the in front of the 9/11 panel?
Well, you know, I think that the 9/11 panel is getting into key questions this week. You know, obviously George Tenet is coming this week as well. You know, what's interesting is that what O'Neill says, and what I have 19,000 documents that O'Neill gave to me, that come from all over the government and have interviewed dozens of people inside this administration. What's clear is that the analysis from the very start from the CIA that was passed up through the principals to the White House, to the president, was not flat-footed analysis. That's what O'Neill says emphatically. He says there was no evidence of weapons of mass destruction, and he read everything that George Tenet passed up through the ranks toward the president. And beyond that, what's clear from O'Neill's testimony, as well as others that I talked to in those early NSC meetings in 2001, is that it was all about Saddam Hussein from the very start. I think the key issue that they're going to be digging into today, you know, and over the next few days, are not only failures in terms of what agencies did or didn't do in relation to one another, but also the key question of leadership from the top. You know, this is a moment where, look, the fact is agencies always have battles with one another. What presidents do is they get involved in priority issues and they knock heads. And they say, enough of that, this is a priority for me, the president, and you've got to get your act together, you've got to be forceful, you've got to be actionable. That's what always happens in government. That seems to be something that did not happen here. That's the key issue.
Right.
Ron, you've been gathering other documents in addition to the 19,000 that sure. had been secret that you gathered about Paul O'Neill right. on your website, ronsuskind.com. Have you come up with anything broader about secrecy and classification or anything especially that related to 9/11?
Yeah, it's interesting. What I did, just so people understand, is that of the documents that are noted in the book and other documents that I found in the trove that I think are of important, compelling public interest, I've posted them on my website. It's what I call an experiment in transparency. People ought to know these things. It helps to create a more nourished public dialogue and meaningful questions. One of the things that is interesting is that secrecy throughout this government was a priority. From the very start, most governments, most administrations view secrecy as a necessary evil, and this administration viewed as a virtue. And what that meant throughout the government, and this is clear in many, many documents that I have, is that it almost encouraged agencies not to talk to one another. Secrecy is a kind of power. I know something in you, if you're in the FBI and I'm in the CIA, you don't know what I know. That's the underside of the public secrecy that we know so much about, where they don't want us to virtually know anything except the very thin official speak of this administration. But it also affects what happens inside the government. That's what we're finding now, and that's what the documents indicate.
Doesn't it make it easier to blame, too?
Well, it does, because you sit there and you're in one silo in one camp at the FBI, and you can point over and you can blame the CIA and vice versa. That's part of the way the game is played, and that's part of the reason that there was such an important mandate for leadership from the very top. Like, that's what happens in all administrations. Something crosses the desk of the president. The president says, "My goodness, this is my priority. Let me get involved. I run this show." That did not happen here.
Yeah, but they're not saying, are they, now that there should be even kind of better communication? What they're saying now is at your point about that there was secrecy or there was failed communication between the intelligence agencies. Now they're saying, well, maybe we'll come up with a brand new intelligence agency.
Right. Look. The fact is that some of the things they're talking about have happened in all governments. What has remedied this endemic problem is presidential leadership. Every time. What's interesting about Dick Clark's testimony, he says Clinton was engaged. We know that Clinton was engaged. He was engaged in many realms. Obviously, the man had his flaws, but he certainly had his strengths in terms of policy analysis, knowing, what is clear and knowable and pertinent. This president, through all of the investigation that I've done over the past year and year and a half, with the documents and talking to cabinet-level officials, not just Paul O'Neill. O'Neill's the leading character in my book, but he's followed by a parade of people who say the president is not engaged on key issues, both foreign and domestic. That comes through time and again. The president is not asking pertinent and informed questions. The president often is simply not aware of key issues.
Do you think it was designed that way? Do you think that Cheney maintains, like, because it's clear that in the book that, Bush is sort of empty. And do you think that this whole, administration of secrecy really enables them to not have to take responsibility for almost anything?
I think there's a central issue of accountability. O'Neill says something interesting, which I've heard echoed by others, in frustration inside the administration. And mind you, these are all Republicans. These are not Democratic or Republican issues. These are American issues. An engaged president who understands choices and consequences. Everyone wants one of those. What happens here is that the basic issue of accountability is damaged. O'Neill says, at the end of the day, he says, I don't care if Dick Cheney is running the government or Karl Rove has too much power. Ultimately, it's the president's administration. He's in charge. If he delegates too much authority to unelected individuals or to his vice president, that's his business. The buck needs to stop somewhere, so we have a duly elected individual who is accountable. That's the bottom line.
Got it.
Ron, we know some things from the briefing that has come out over the last few days and testimony from 9/11. And, we know that the White House was so worried about a security threat that they banned John Ashcroft from flying commercial in the weeks before 9/11, and that they also banned senior officials from taking summer vacation. Now, you're an economics guy. You have written about Paul O'Neill, the former Treasury Secretary, why do you think they didn't tell the public about their concerns, if only in a general way?
Well, you know, it's interesting because what you find time and again is this ethos of message control, where essentially everybody is reading off of a very, very thin kind of cue card, official speak. What it means is that we don't have real public dialogue as we've tended to define them in America in the past 30 or 40 years, you know, where sometimes inconvenient facts are offered to the public because they ought to know these things. That doesn't happen. A.B., what you find is inside of the government through that summer, there were key officials. George Tenet was one of them. John Ashcroft was another, who were acutely concerned about terrorist threat. I mean, George Tenet was running all over the government saying, you know, please, someone listen to me. And I'm not sure if George Tenet will say that in front of the commission this week, but I think he ought to.
Thank you very much.
And there are many people who talk to George Tenet in the government who are on the other side of those conversations, you know, where Tenet says, we are in a threat posture. We are, hearing a kind of a level of activity, targeted activity toward the United States that is making me, as the head of the CIA, you know, profoundly concerned. Clearly, he did not get a hearing through the summer. That's
Ron,
clear.
Ron, thank you very much. Thank you very much. It was a very passionate and intelligent assessment. I appreciate it.
Ron, take care, guys.
Okay, bye. Ron Suskind, the author of The Price of Loyalty. Right now, it's time. I'm Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, thank you. You know, we're all very excited, George W., that you're going to be qualifying tonight at the big meeting. And, you know, I know it's a little overwhelming, but don't forget, it's all about showing up, man. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be sharing in front of a room full of people, and I want you to be rigorously honest. You know, I know that scares you, but you've got to turn it over and let go and let God. And if that means you're not reelected this fall, hey, maybe that's your higher power's plan for you. Maybe losing the election is just part of the journey you're on, man. All right? So, you know, good luck tonight. Remember, it works if you work it. Keep it simple. First things first. Think, think, think. And, you know, God doesn't wake up and think he's you. That's Recovery Corner for today. 4:13:04.
Still ahead, are the U.S. soldiers in Iraq heroes? We'll let you know what Andy Rooney said, and Mark will have his morning devotional. But first, a quick check of the headlines. Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Some other stories today. Andy Rooney, the crusty, grumpy guy on CBS 60 Minutes, says that not all U.S. soldiers serving in Iraq are heroes, that they're not all gladly giving their lives over there. So, yeah, okay, I get his point. I'm sure.
Yeah, what is his point?
The point is that some guys just, you know, signed up to because they, you know, they screwed up in college, or they wanted a job, or they needed a job, or they wanted to get training somehow. It wasn't their initial intention to actually, you know, fight. And now that they're fighting, they're being called heroes. And Rooney sees it as encouraging that we keep saying they're heroes to boost, you know, their morale. But he doesn't necessarily think that is, you know, appropriate or effective because, you know, many of them are clearly unhappy. There's been 23 suicides, and that's his point.
Okay. Mm. I mean, I think it's a bit mean to say that they're not brave heroes, but I mean, you have to actually do something heroic to be a hero, right? And that they are working hard, and they're all over there, and as far as I see, there's no big mutiny going on.
Where is the intersection of the ordinary people who went over there for whatever reasons, or who joined the service for whatever reason,
and those who died? You know
where
I think it is? It's on the pages of the New York Post today, where there's a family somewhere where they have three daughters. They had three daughters serving over there, one girl and then twin daughters, and one of the twins, Michelle, I think her name was killed. And the dad says in the article that the two sisters have been allowed to come back for the funeral, and he doesn't want them going back.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that clearly is one of those sort of big emotional, terrible, tragic family stories that people want to play into this idea that, you know, is public support for the war waning? I mean, it is harder to support any kind of military action when the consequences become dire. When it looks as though it's going smoothly and people are not being killed and it's not your family being affected, then it's relatively straightforward to sign on, right?
Well, whether they're heroes or not really kind of begs the issue anyway. Are they being properly taken care of? Are the people who are
especially when they come back?
You know, yeah. Are they? But you know, people who are wounded in combat, how are they being treated?
Some of them are bringing their own Kevlar vests because they weren't, you know, appropriately outfitted. Some of them are coming back and not getting proper medical attention.
Some of them
are losing a certain amount of faith in the actual action that they're taking. And I think that what Sue was saying is true, but in the sense that, you know, many of these guys are, I think, beginning to question the integrity of the cause.
The ongoing stories. I mean, there have been many articles, New York Times Magazine, Mother Jones Magazine, the March-April edition of injured veterans back from the war in Iraq, terrible injuries, lost limbs, feelings that they're not getting medical attention, counseling, things they need to rehabilitate themselves and get back on with their life. I mean, this has been the month with the most number of deaths and injuries, so I only assume that we're going to get more of those kind of stories.
There's
true that this war has had one of the highest suicide rates of troops actually still there in the field of any war in recent memory.
Yeah, or maybe the most reported. I mean, it's unclear. Yeah, I don't know that in the past that we would have heard about these type of things.
But, you know, that's an interesting question. It seems as though there's a lot more scrutiny of this than there have been in years. But certainly there were a lot of people in Vietnam who came back less than whole. I mean, a lot less
than whole in many ways. You know, mentally, physically, emotionally.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be happening now, too. There was a big article in the New York Times Magazine tracking a couple of these guys who had been there and how just the effects of being in that kind of situation, you know, and being out there in the middle of the desert, not knowing what's going to happen, how many of them, you know, wake up still with nightmares, how many of them, you know, have physical liabilities that are, you know, incapacitating them completely and not getting a lot of, you know, support, and how to, you know, rotate back into regular life. I guess that's always been an issue with warfare, though.
Well, you know, it seems like there's less rotating back into regular life than most people thought, because there's a call, A, to keep more troops over there for longer periods of time.
I know. They're now offering, you know, weekend packages to people who want to fight.
To
fly out and fight for the weekend and go back.
Well, and they also now have this general who's saying, look, we need more troops. And this, of course, is a direct slap in the face of Donald Rumsfeld, the defense secretary, his boss, who has always maintained from the beginning of this conflict that it could be done with a minimal amount of soldiers.
Well, they thought the streamlined army would just, you know, bully over, you know, what was left of or what is Saddam's army, which, you know, apparently wasn't that effective. I don't think they really counted on these, you know, religious militias and, you know, insurgencies from clerics and whatnot. I don't really think they banked on that.
No,
but despite all this, there doesn't seem to be any sign that the American public is withdrawing its support for the troops. I mean, there's all that sort of morale
boosting
for the troops so that people are still very supportive of the job that the U.S. allies are doing. They might not like the fact that more people are being killed. They might not like the fact that it's chaotic. They might be concerned that things have looked even fleetingly kind of out of control, or the military is insisting that everything is under control. In fact, some of the fighting has died down this week. There's no sign of a growing support from American people all over the country that they are losing patience with the military operation led by the U.S.
How can you not? If you are losing support, if you are waning in your support of the war, how on some level is that not waning in support, or at least being sympathetic to what the troops are going through? I don't know how you can have one without the other. And I think that's what Rooney is trying to really explore here, is that, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, might not want to be there anymore. So that's not waning
support.
I'm
sure they don't want to be there, but it's all... it's all very carefully controlled, isn't it? I mean,
support for the war is waning. It is waning.
It is waning, yeah. But the White House knows that. I mean, Bush...
But you just said it wasn't. I was just trying to address
that. No, I'm just saying that there's no... I don't see signs of, group...
revolution?
Protests.
Well, let's see if they reintroduce the draft.
Or the troops.
There was a fairly big protest.
Huge protest here.
This is one of the legacies of Vietnam, people. This is one of the things that people wrestled with. There were troops coming home from Vietnam and people calling them baby killers. And there are a lot of folks who oppose the war.
Now they're coming home, they're just not calling them at all.
At all, yeah. But I mean, people now are trying to reconcile their lack of support for the war with their support of the troops themselves, of the people.
It's got to be a hard situation, man. I mean, to be there and to be, you know, afraid and not clear what, you know, when it's going to end or what the cause is or when you're going to go home.
Yeah.
That there's no definitions, you know, in terms of time. It must be horrifying.
Well, there are a lot of people back home, you know, the spouses of folks who were over there. Who really, and it's not just, you know, the issue is not just financial. The issue is the government told them one thing, and now they're being told something else about when their loved ones are going to be home.
And just the issue of you know, the veterans agencies, you know, being really sort of concerned about, you know, how these guys are treated when they get back and whether or not they get the proper medical attention or the proper attention necessary to try to, you know, begin a regular life again is under question. It's being criticized.
Well, yeah, that woman, Shoshana Johnson, got like 30% of her base salary when she got back. They adjusted it after Jesse Jackson's protest and some others protested, but the woman who was wounded over there,
right,
who was held captive, I think it was 7-8 days or whatever, she was only getting 30% of her
base. Wow.
Yeah, when she first got back. Now, they've straightened that out. She opened the New York Stock Exchange one day, posed for a magazine, the whole nine yards. But initially, when she got home,
right,
30%.
Wow, and Bush just started visiting guys in the hospital.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You only get rich and famous if you end up on one of the under the network talk shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, or do you win the lottery? You know, maybe they'll have a, you know, maybe they'll have a version of one of those reality shows with just vets.
No, it's not funny. It wouldn't be a bad idea. The way
our morning devotional is coming up, and so are you. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR-0. That's dialed to zero. That's 866-303-2270.
It's so well hidden, the Air Force hasn't even found it yet.
John Ashcroft is listening.
I'm positive I can pinpoint it from aerial maps.
Find out why.
I will find you!
It's 15 minutes before the hour. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron here on Air America Radio. Right now it's time for our morning devotional.
Each day on morning sedition we join hands and humbly ask the Heavenly Father for his guidance in the coming day. Today Attorney General John Ashcroft will be testifying before the 9/11 Commission. Dear Lord, please protect and watch over your servant John Ashcroft as he testifies today. Surely he walks through the valley of death, or at least the valley of possible perjury. We know how precious John is to you, Lord. Of all your children, he is the child who sits in the front seat in the class, who always raises his hand even when he doesn't know the answers. He is the child who tells you, Lord, as soon as you walk back into the room, that Mark was causing trouble, throwing spit wads and writing irreverent devotionals. So please watch over your child, John Ashcroft, Lord, because if I ever catch that little weasel behind the gymnasium, I'm going to give him a wedgie that'll have him calling your name an octave higher. Do you understand, Lord? For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory and the world without end. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen. That's been our morning devotional.
Our phones are open to you at 866-303-AARZ. You know, we could get a whole evangelical thing going on.
You get more people going, hey, that's not
that's
funny.
That's funny, you're right. 866-303-2270. And again, we want to remind folks, if you cannot get Morning Sedition near you, you can certainly go up on our website, www.airamericaradio.com. Let's say good morning to Frank from Illinois.
Morning.
Hi, Frank.
Hey. Just got a statement I'd like to make, and I'll keep it brief. If you'll notice, I haven't heard much talk about the Honorable Rumsfeld, and you have to keep in mind that this guy had several high-ranking military officers replaced, so the folks were toe the line with his decisions and ideas and direction.
Right.
And when you take a good look at that, you'll realize that the military, in the mid-'80s, early 90s, we heard about a hollow force. What Donald Rumsfeld has done by getting these guys in line is ensuring that 5 years from now we'll have a military with all of the attrition that we'll see after this conflict, we'll have a military that may precisely be incapable of conducting wartime efforts as we're doing them now.
So he's weakening the military, in essence, over the long term, is what you're saying, Frank.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for your call. That's a very important way of looking at it.
I think that's why he's going to go after General John Abizade next. He's the guy who's in charge of the U.S. forces in the Middle East.
But a lot of people don't think in terms of that. That, like, you know, because we haven't seen a war like this, you know, since Vietnam, certainly. And that, you know, if you expend this number of troops and, you know, deplete them, you know, on, you know, literally or even mentally, emotionally, physically and everything else, that eventually you will deplete it. And over the long haul, will weaken the military.
Definitely. Let's go to Jenny from Manhattan. Jenny.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. You Jenny from the block?
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
Good. I've really been enjoying listening to you. Well,
thank you.
I was wondering, I don't know that anybody has picked up on this, but for the last couple of days in the mainstream media, on a 6:30 news, I've heard George Bush's Crawford Ranch referred to as the Western White House.
Uh-oh.
Has anybody noticed that?
As opposed to the bunker or the compound?
Well, as opposed to his vacation home.
Right,
really.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he does have a teleconference center there. He does make a big thing about how he's there. He's not really on holiday. He's actually working.
He's got
and it might actually be further west if you draw a line straight down from Washington, D.C. It's not further east, I don't think.
Well,
your point is that, you know, that it metaphorically it is kind of a lie.
Yeah.
That it's really just where he goes to, you know, kick back and, you know, ride around in tractors with his hunting buddies.
But, you know, it helps if you see that reference as ironic.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole spin, the Operation Vigilant Sword and, you know, putting the names on something that, you
Operation
know,
Tumbleweed.
Yeah.
Operation Fixing the Fence.
Operation Angry Boyfriend.
All right.
You know, I mean,
I'm not sure we're going to go there, Jen. No,
what did that mean, Jen?
Not today.
What did that mean, Operation Angry Boyfriend?
Tell us.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. All of those names are just so random. They're thought up by some
I don't think the Operation Random Boyfriend sounded so random, Jen. I think you let something slip there.
Maybe.
Jenny, thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Now, we've got somebody on the line.
The ranch.
Well, now we've got somebody from Chappaqua.
Again?
Again.
Let's put him on.
Let's put on William from Chappaqua.
How you doing, Mr. Clinton?
Good morning.
What's going on?
I made some revisions based on our discussion of earlier.
You haven't been holding on, have you?
No. I went back to my typewriter and banged out some... pros.
Okay.
Define bang.
Pros.
Pros.
Define bang. That's good, right? But go ahead. Let's have a listen. Ex-President Bill Clinton.
Okay, my Vice President, Al Gore, took a more active role in government than any Vice President before him. Perhaps his greatest contribution was his initiative to reduce the size of the federal government. He had proudly put his thorough, impressive report upon my desk that morning. At a meeting that night, I relied on that report to cushion the ample buttocks of my new intern.
Wait. Yeah, okay.
Ashley was now wearing only brief white panties.
Wait. This is the stuff you already read already.
Well, yes. It's my favorite part.
He
revised the part before this. Now he's going back to the Ashley panties.
I thought it needed more setup.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Quinn. You know, we'll get back to you because
we
want to hear the end of that, but we want to take some other callers.
But don't
cutting me off before the end. I hate when that happens.
President Bill Clinton. Ed in Los Angeles. Are you there, Ed? Yeah, he's going to be here in a second. How you doing, Ed? What do you got?
Oh, good. This thing has baffled me. If the regarding Condoleezza Rice's testimony about the historical nature of the of that August 10th memo was if it's purely historical, then why does it even need to be classified?
Because they like to classify everything over there.
That's the only
possible explanation.
You know, you just made my brain go. You know, like literally, you bent my brain in a circle. That's a good question. I think they're trying to classify all history so they can lock it up and be done with it.
We're just going to give the number one quick time a moment. 1-866-303-AAR0. That's 1-866-303-2273. 70.
The years 1960 through 1982 have been classified.
Classified, right?
We have no access to any of those.
Can you imagine what will happen no matter how long Bush serves in office when they get ready to try and deal with his papers?
He's right, though. I mean, his papers?
His
what
papers?
Well, you mean the newspaper, the cards he did?
A couple of sheets here or there.
Yeah. It's an interesting question, only in the sense that, like, people really want to insist, and I believe that...
He might not have a library. He might have a drawer. A presidential drawer.
A presidential drawer at his dad's library.
We may generate more paper on this show than he'll end up.
But I think I think a lot of people just want to, accuse her of spinning things and hiding things, and I think that's absolutely true. I think that Rice was covering. Roger in New York. Can you get him on the phone there, Chris? Hi, Roger. What do you got?
How you doing? Listen, I think I have a bit of a solution for a lot of the problem in Iraq.
Thank God.
Thank you. Run it.
And that's part, to get American money on the streets, literally. Have these people get back to work building their own streets, their own homes.
So instead of dumping hearts and mind flyers, we should just drop greenbacks?
Well, no, not just drop them.
I'm kidding. Take it easy. Okay.
There's plenty of enough money involved in what's already been promised to do this job.
Right.
That we could put it back in their hands, get them off the battlefield and into shovels.
But should the money be there already? Aren't they sitting on all the oil in the world? How come they can't?
We could certainly institute that American cash is used over there and that loans are made until the oil is up and running and that we're guaranteed to reduce our oil expenses. In the future.
We could use that right now. I could use a little reduction in that.
Of course we could.
I think that one of the things that's happened is that one of the organizations that's supposed to give grants to sort of fledgling democracy groups and help establish some sort of foundation before they hand over power to the Iraqis in June, is that the money for that has been cut, and also some groups have gotten absolutely none at all. And then you have people who have ties to Halliburton and Dick Cheney being given the job of setting up radio television networks who've never, ever done any kind of media, television, radio.
We have that problem here.
Except we're not handing over sovereignty to anybody.
Yeah, right.
I jest.
We just have to keep going.
Did we find out if Gillette was actually a Republican contributor? Is Gillette actually a Republican contributor that's trying to undermine us from the inside?
Could be.
Gillette is the system we use to operate the entire radio network. It's a computer system that, we've had minor difficulties with, Chris. Would you say minor difficulties?
Minor difficulties.
Chris threw a chair 2 days ago. All right, now what I'm trying to figure out is Gillette a Republican contributor that is trying to undermine us from the inside? Is this program actually an assassin planted in our hard drives to make our lives miserable and tear down some of the only free speech in this country? I put that to Gillette. I put it to him.
Well, let's put it to Gordon. Gordon's calling us from Long Island. Gordon.
Yeah. How you doing?
How you doing?
All righty. I was wondering. I've been listening to all the different newses, and I don't hear anybody talking about Barbara Bush.
All the different newses?
Right.
Okay.
Actually, I've been calling about Barbara Bush.
NBC, CBS, Fox.
I just like the use of the plural there. It's interesting and poetic.
Yeah, it is.
So you never hear anybody talking about Barbara Bush.
Right.
Now, she was on a show, I believe it was Barbara Walters.
Yeah.
And she was asked a question, which was, how do you feel...
Which was, why? Why did you have them? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It was, how does it make you feel when you hear people talking about your son and about your husband and about your grandchildren? And she pointed her finger and had the nastiest look on her face and said, you talk about my family and you're dead. Well, we have to remember.
She said that and she... Okay, well, thank you.
That's why 6,000 Iraqis are dead.
Well, anyway, she always was a bit of a... battle axe, to say the least. I went to the White House once when I was covering politics in Washington for a London newspaper, and to meet George Bush, Daddy Bush, and Barbara, and she was incredibly, incredibly fierce. She acts kind of charming, but she's not. She's very tough. But here's my latest beef with Barbara Bush. For their Easter meal, she served ginger snap and apricot-crusted ham. Why do you serve ham covered with cookies?
Tasty.
Weird. I think weird.
Joel in New Jersey.
Weird, Mama.
Hey, Joel, what's going on? What's on your mind, man?
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thank you. I wanted you all to know that yesterday there's a nationally syndicated comic strip called Non Sequitur, and frequently takes a political bent on observations, and you were the topic of yesterday's strip.
Air America or Morning Sedition?
Morning Sedition.
Oh, really? Uh-oh. Did it make us look good?
And Air America, yes, absolutely.
Ah, right on.
It was in competition with a fictional conglomerate called Clean Channel Communications.
Oh, right on. Thanks a lot, Joe. I got to go look for that comic
yeah,
now.
I appreciate that. Our final hour is coming up. We'll have more on the Bush News Conference tonight. The latest from Iraq Plus, Mark Maron's own daily presidential briefing, part deux, I think. Didn't you do one before?
No, this is the new one. This is the private. This is a confidential and a PBB. That was
double
just
secret
right
probation
Facebook. Yeah.
Daily briefing. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio. Good morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, would you buy a new Hyundai at 0% financing, no money down, and you can drive it off the lot? In Iraq. Plus, you've heard all about the presidential daily briefing from August 6, 2001, but we'll have the PDB for April 13, 2004. That's all ahead, but right now I've got Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron with me.
Dude, I'm still on Jew Watch. Still on Jew Watch.
I know you are.
I cannot. I'm like completely obsessed. Now, if you just tuned in...
We want names.
Well, I'll give you some more names, but I got more than that, man. I got an email from my friend Ron Zimmerman, who sent an email saying we got to sign a petition to get this Google link off. If you do a Google search on the word Jew, you go to Jew Watch. And Jew Watch is keeping a close watch on Jewish communities and organizations worldwide. This is the most obsessively archived, you know, website I've ever seen in my life. And not only is the guy who compiled it some sort of anti-Semite, but he's also like this incredible music trivia guy. Paula Abdul, did you know? Jewish.
I didn't know.
But he has to qualify someone. It says, mother is a French-Canadian Jew, which is much different than the Manhattan
Jew. Too much time on his hands, this guy.
Oh, all these guys do, yeah. But here's what I'm at now. Now you can link to, there's all these different places you can go, Jewish-occupied governments.
Mm.
Yeah, so they got the USSR, 1920 to 1990, CIS, 1990 to present, Israel, really, United States. Well, they actually might be right now. You know, there is, between Wolfowitz and Pearl, there is a Zionist-occupied government. But Germany, United Kingdom, Australia, France, and then it has Usenet. Isn't that a news group service or some sort of internet community?
No, it's an island.
Is it? Usenet Island?
CIS.
Just a bunch of guys with computers? Maybe
what
I'm
is
missing.
CIS?
See, isn't that the new Soviet Union, CIS? Now you called me on it. I just read it off the thing, and I didn't have time to do the research.
The C must be for communists.
Yeah, the thing is that you can look at this two ways. I know Jews are upset, and I know that, you know, the word Jew upsets people, although I've referred to myself as a Jew. I guess that's okay for me to do that, but it's all how you spin it, right? It's all about spin in this modern world. I think you should go to Jew Watch and celebrate the progress, ambition, and success of
only
the
you.
Jewish people in the world. We have occupied governments, some of the greatest entertainers of all time. All of them,
and
all
Paul
of them,
Abdul.
Apparently were Jewish. And Paul Abdul, which I'm not sure will claim. But I mean, you know, if her mother was actually a French-Canadian Jew, then she is a Jew.
But here's my question.
Why don't you set up the Jew Watch Watch?
Because I'm just like so thrilled to be part
of
the Jew Watch and the Jew Watch.
But I got a question.
I'm thrilled to be part of this.
If this Jew Watch is the most viewed thing on Google, because it comes up first, right?
Yeah.
No, on the most viewed thing when you put
in
Jew on the search.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. When you put it, okay, so that is the most hit site.
Yeah.
I
think the guy's a Jew. I think the guy who put this together has got to be a Jew, because you can't have this much passion, you know, and all these different links, because a lot of them are just, you know, regular old links. You know, John Stewart's
on here.
But who
are the people
John
that are going
on here?
To
I'm not
list.
On here. How
Mark
am I not Maron. Gonna 500?
Mark Maron and his friend.
You made it number one, Maron.
Dude, Robin Williams? Come on. Robin Williams is not Jewish.
He may have a great, 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 great,
great,
great, great pet cat who was Jewish.
He said he was Jewish on Oprah, whatever that means, but I can't accept
that.
He
was goofing, maybe.
John Stewart's on here. I'm not on here. 500 million.
See, this is the cruel. This is the thing where he's like,
I'm not on it.
John Stewart.
Damn it.
Susie from Susie and the Banshees.
Susie?
She ran the whole goth Jew movement. That's under, it's a whole other thing, is that there was a goth Jew movement. you know, years ago. Am I going on too much? Let's
yes.
Let's move
the
along.
The answer.
Corey Spelling
from
Nine
to Watch tomorrow.
Of course.
Only because we need to do Iraq Watch now.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, we have an U.S. Apache helicopter reported on the wires burning on the ground outside Fallujah.
Right now?
But we have some good news. We have some 8 Ukrainian and 5 Russian employees. So they are 5 Ukrainians and 3 Russians. The hostages who were taken have been freed, reports the Russian Foreign Ministry.
Now, is that 8 out of 12 or out of 11?
No,
or there weren't 11 to begin with.
There were 8 out of 8. I think the other 3 were the Japanese, weren't they? 3 of the Japanese, and we still don't know what's happened to them. But
well,
the Ukrainians and Russians.
There were 11 Russians.
Iggy Pop is not Jewish.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm sorry. He's not Jewish. There's no way. I'd like to own that guy. I'd like to have him as part of us, please. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's okay. I'm hoping that they're going to come out with the 9/11 author of that presidential daily briefing. I mean, we've got the commission still on Capitol Hill today, the independent 9/11 commission.
Yeah.
John Ashcroft, defense secretary, is due to testify, as are the heads and former heads of the FBI. And for the last week or so, and intensely over the weekend, the administration's been trying to stick 9/11 on the FBI. It's all the FBI's fault that there wasn't adequate communication between the various intelligence agencies. So I am really looking forward to Louis Freeh, the former head of the FBI, fighting back. I don't think he's going to take any nonsense up there.
Lou.
Well, he didn't in the Wall Street Journal. He wrote an op-ed piece. What was that?
Washington Post.
No, it was the Wall Street Journal.
I read that thing.
Yeah,
I read that thing, and I'm still not clear what he was saying.
He was saying it wasn't me, just like Shaggy.
So they're all saying that.
Huh? Yeah.
It's like, he did it. No, he did it. No, I didn't. You did it. Stop it. Boom.
Well, here's the thing that you'll really care about, though. The American Idol has been bumped off the TV screens tonight for the Bush press conference.
I've never seen that show.
A national crisis, folks, bumps American Idol off the screen.
I think that they should do I think maybe they should televise the panel as if it were American Idol. That would be,
what,
I think
vote them off one by one?
Yeah.
I'm voting that Richard Benveniste,
you're out.
Richard Benveniste, Wall Street.
No, they'd be the judges.
They would be the judges.
Yeah, they could just call them and say, your spin is so old and tired, and I don't believe a word you're saying. And until you can, you know, speak the truth and look us in the eye and not give us this BS, you know, there's no way you're moving forward.
Well, that was called presidential elections. Isn't that basically a long-winded version of American Idol? We'll see who's left standing in November.
Yeah, I think they should do it like American Idol. At least we get a reasonable count.
By the way, did anybody see the picture of yesterday of Bush standing there with Condoleezza Rice under an umbrella?
Oh, after
when
the
she
Easter
was giving, yeah, when she was giving him the evil eye.
Really?
I mean, the look on this woman's face, she looked like a horror movie.
Photographers, I think, like catching Condi looking serious. She does have a very intense expression, but they love nothing more than getting her looking as though she's glowering.
Do you think she's a lighthearted person, that she likes, you know, walks in the
party
on
girl?
The beach?
I don't know about that.
She
is very serious. I mean, I don't think she's going to be yucking.
Do you think
she
watches arena football on weekends? I know she loves football. I just want
to
watch indoor football.
She might, but she'd deny that she does.
Okay, here's something that might get the administration worried, that now that the senior military officials in Iraq have asked for more troops because the insurgency looks as though it's hard to squash. The insurgents are increasingly targeting aid workers and army contractors, and now there are 7 civilians who are working for Halliburton who were reported missing on Monday.
There's a weird line between, you know, contractors and mercenaries in some of these incidents.
There is, but it's now what looks to be a problem, and why there have to be more troops from the United States going in.
The
insurgents are smart. They are attacking U.S. military supply lines.
Right.
They go for hundreds of miles, all from northern Iraq, right up to the border with Kuwait.
Are they actually giving them credit for being tactically intelligent?
Someone
needs
to be in all of this.
Now, does anybody know what happened to what's going on with the American hostage, Thomas Hamill, who apparently is some pig farmer from Mississippi who wanted to make some quick money?
Is that why he's an adventure guy?
Well, he is not yet.
No?
He's not released. There's no word on that.
Can you imagine that? I mean, it's so awful and frightening. Could you imagine that? I couldn't even imagine being a hostage because, you know, I am sort of a wuss.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I just...
Wouldn't we all be with a gun stuck in our nose?
But I mean, I'd be like, dude, what do you need? What
That's
do you need
okay. You could stand up and start telling them jokes, and then they'd say, he's a funny guy, let him go.
Yeah, except they'd have to get it translated. I know how to translate, it's very funny. And then, like, they'd lose some of the, you know, the guy would have to keep prefacing it, like, crazy, Mark, neurotic, crazy. Is there a word for neurotic?
But you know
crazy?
What? Now you would be glad that your name isn't on that list in Jew Watch.
Oh, it's on there now. Are you kidding? I've got the entire Jew Watch team working overtime right now. Iggy Pop know. Is not Jewish.
Iggy Pop is not Jewish? Are
no.
you sure?
Yes.
Are you certain?
I feel bad for the guy being held hostage.
I do, too. I hope they let him, you know, I hope he gets freed and freed soon unharmed. Coming up, never mind a presidential daily briefing from 3 years ago. Mark Maron's got one of his own. Plus, your phone calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. Kiss my left ass cheek.
Ooh. It's 20 past the hour, and we're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's dial zero. Don't dial like 12 numbers or whatever. That's 866-303-2270. Just correcting the mistake from earlier. But first, it's time to reveal the top secret contents of the intelligence community's presidential daily briefing for Tuesday, April 13th. Now, this is like a classified top secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB is called Washington Press Corps Determined to Ask Questions at Tonight's Press Conference. Prefaced by Condoleezza Rice. Mr. President, please keep in mind that just because this document is called Washington Press Corps Determined to Ask Questions at Tonight's Press Conference, that doesn't mean it's about the Washington Press Corps being determined to ask questions at tonight's press conference. This is an historical document, and nobody expects you as President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of our armed forces to have any idea of what any of this is about. All right, this is a top-secret briefing from various intelligence sources. Mr. President, you are scheduled for a press conference at 8:30 Eastern Time tonight, but there is no way of knowing whether this is true or not. That's been our presidential daily briefing. A new segment. We're going to get those every day because we've got somebody on the inside, Riley. Hey, Chris, sound guy, Geddy Lee.
Geddy Lee from Rush?
Lead singer Rush, Jewish.
Really?
Absolutely, according to this. The reason they thought Iggy Pop was Jewish because his last name is Osterberg. So to some people, they just see Berg, Jew, you know. But he's not. I know he's not.
Because there's somebody on the line that says he is.
Read Legs McNeil's book, Please Kill Me. And I mean, I've read things about him. Maybe I'm wrong. There's someone on the line that says he is?
I think. Somebody says Iggy Pop is Jewish.
Can we talk to him?
Sure.
I know it's not that important.
Srikan,
Connecticut.
It is not that important, but he does talk about it in a Rolling Stone interview from last year.
I thought I read that he comes from sort of like, he's from like Michigan or from the Detroit area.
He could be Jewish and come from Detroit.
No,
Michigan.
But I read that it wasn't the case. But if he says he is, and, you know, God knows whether or not Iggy, you know, on any given day is saying, you know, what's really, you know what I mean? I'm a huge fan, Iggy, and if I'm wrong, I guess maybe I'm wrong. But I thank you for clearing that up, and I'll have to apologize to Jew Watch.
Oh.
Yeah, Jew Watch wouldn't lie. Elvis is Jewish. Come on.
Who's next? Let's go to Lewis from Brooklyn.
Hello.
Hi. What's up, man?
Yeah, I feel like one thing is that you guys, I like the show. I think it's great. But I think you guys are focusing so much on Iraq and kind of missing some of the problems in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Americans are sort of bought into this myth that all this productivity that they keep talking about in the press is so good for us. And, it seems like economists, all they focus upon is GDP and output per worker. And the fact is more workers, the average American is working harder than they did 20 years ago per hour.
Yeah.
And they're dying younger.
Right.
I don't know if you heard, Lewis, we had Robert Reich, the former Treasury Secretary under Clinton, on last week where we talked about, sorry, Labour Secretary, Labour. I beg your pardon, Labour Secretary under Clinton last week, and where we woke him up, actually, on the day that the number figures for employment came out, the new jobs for March, and we talked about that, how American workers were working more hours than ever before but getting paid less for them.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the Americans are bought into this myth that, you know, we're all part of this, you know, the benefits of this productivity when, you know, we're all investors. When I have like 5 shares and Rupert Murdoch and Jack Welch have 5 million and we're all benefiting. And the fact is all that productivity is going to the bottom line of their profit margins, but we're not seeing any of it. We're not, you know, we're not seeing any of the benefits of that increased productivity. I mean, like 20, you know, if you go back 50 or 60 years ago, companies like General Motors, they promised that, we'd be working like 6 months of the year because everything would be so efficient because technology would
help
us.
And we'd have jetpacks.
Exactly, yeah. Right? And what happened? All that technology increased our efficiency, and we're not seeing any of the gains of it. We're working more. We're dying younger. We're getting paid less.
But if we had a jetpack, it wouldn't matter, would it?
You know, it sounds like some 63 World's Fair talk.
No, I know what he's. I understand what he's saying. It's an important call, and he's basically saying maybe we should cover a little bit of economy stuff every day to make sure we make people understand that, you know, under this administration, people are way more out of work, more jobs were lost, and people are working harder for less money.
For less money. That's true.
Okay, Ethan, thank you.
That's Lewis.
No, Lewis, sorry. Lewis, thank you. We'll go to Ethan in Ohio.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
All right.
Good. I just want to let you know, I was at Iggy's bar mitzvah, so I can vouch for that.
Whoa! You got to be kidding me.
Are you kidding us?
I was also at Nell Carter's bas mitzvah.
All right.
Okay, what are you doing? Sending a resume?
No, yeah.
Did the Stooges play at his bar mitzvah? They do, I want to be your dog?
Anyway, I just wanted to just express this thought. I just got an email from a friend of mine who's serving in Iraq last night, and he was describing the really horrible conditions on their base. They're basically living in what he described as sort of a minimum security prison, and they're crapping in porta potties and eating real slop. So
he wants to come home.
I thought the Halliburton caterers were treating them well.
I'm very much against the war myself, but I just wanted to express this idea that if anyone was interested in giving these guys a break, he said that he and his unit are very interested in getting care packages to relieve the kind of monotony of what they eat and that kind of thing.
Okay, we'll pass that along.
Like military care package, or if you Google gift for soldier, a lot of things come up, like something called treatsfortroops.com.
Oh, wow.
Or military care packages.
Well, that's a nice thing.
Even if you're not sort of politically in favor of what's going on,
you can send some brownies.
The war, you can still sort of sympathize and try to help out some guys who are really busting their asses over
there. Okay, great. Nice. Ethan, would you do something for me? When you email your friend back, would you ask him to go on to the Hyundai website, www.hyundaiusa.com, and fill in the thing for test driving a Hyundai with his zip code of where he's hanging out in Iraq, and let me know how quickly he gets a response.
I will do that, but I'm just saying
Hyundai has said that they are going to start selling cars to Iraqis, and I'm really baffled to how anybody in Iraq is really kind of, you know, has $16,000 starting price to go and even buy a Hyundai Sonata, and, you know, how they're going to start a Hyundai dealership in Iraq. So we mentioned it earlier in the show, and I went onto the Hyundai website, but I realized I didn't have a zip code or an address in Iraq, and I'm looking for somebody who does, so maybe your friend could help me out and go to the website, and then you can click on something, and it will come up with an invitation to test drive a Hyundai.
Okay, I'll do that.
And then let me know what happens if he gets a response.
That story back to you.
Good. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks for the food hit, too. Yeah. I think it's a nice gesture.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's definitely important. Thanks, Ethan.
John in Chicago is on hold. Here he is. How are you, John?
Oh, hello.
Where are you at? What's on your mind? Lost
Hello?
Him.
Hello?
You there? Hey.
Hello?
Hi, John. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay. What's your question?
I have a Jew Watch tip for you.
We've got the Jews on board, yeah.
In 1492, Ferdinand and Isabella expelled the Jews from Spain.
Yes.
And about half of the people of Barcelona and Madrid are descendants of conversos. They're Jewish by blood.
Right, but they're Catholics. I know about these people.
And a lot of Jews fled to Sicily. About a quarter of Messina and Palermo and Catania
are Jews, and they don't know it.
Are descendants of conversos.
Okay, well, we'll get it.
They're Jewish by blood too. You know, AAR0 also is bar operator.
Oh, okay.
I'm just glad those Jews went somewhere where the food was good in Sicily. But thanks very much for that anagram.
It's an interesting thing about those conversos, because I grew up in New Mexico, and they found these Jews living in southern New Mexico who were Catholics, and they had parts of the Jewish ceremony in their Catholicism, and they had no idea that they were descendants of these people that left after the Inquisition and were actually Jews, not Catholics.
Mm. Oof. Coming up, what's wrong with liberals? I'm sure John Stossel will tell us. He's coming up in our final half hour. Plus, your marching orders are almost ready. The liberal agenda, when we come back here on Air America Radio. But first, a quick check of the headlines on the half hour. Hi, Mark. Oops. I'm Mark Riley with two helicopters.
What, you think you were me?
Yeah, almost. Here on Air America Radio, one of the few people in the mainstream media who hasn't been tarred as a liberal by the right is John Stossel. He's the co-anchor of ABC's 2020, and his best-selling book is Give Me a Break, How I Exposed Hucksters, Cheats, and Scam Artists and Became the Scourge of the Liberal Media. Despite all this, he's joining us live in the studio right now. Good morning to you. How you doing?
Good morning, Mark. Yes.
Thank you very much
for
being
here. In the nest.
All right. Now, let me ask you something. I remember when you were on local TV here in New York, when you were a consumer reporter, you broke a lot of great stories back in the day. What happened? Suddenly you became this liberal scourge. I mean, how did you make the transition from doing some really groundbreaking, I thought, consumer work, both on the local and national level, to becoming a pundit?
Well, I think I'm still doing groundbreaking work. I just woke up. That's why I wrote Give Me a Break. I realized who was really ripping us off. And business does it sometimes, but government does it worse. And I started applying the same skepticism to government.
But was it because you didn't believe in their regulating ability when it came to consumer products?
Well, I was a liberal when I started. I thought, yes, just these people are ripping us off.
You still kind of look like one, man.
Yeah.
Got to pass these rules that'll make it better. And I, probably more than anyone in America, I watched the regulators work for 20 years.
Yeah.
And they make life worse. They take our money and our freedom, and the cheaters still cheat.
But do they not ever, you know, call, you know, a product bad that is bad? Or do they not ever protect the people?
Well, calling a product bad would be fine. That's what consumer reporters do, and that's great. But when they pass rules, rules are forced. They take away some of your choices.
For instance,
what would happen is they build an empire for bureaucrats and rich lawyers, and the people selling the breast enlargers and the burned fat while you sleep pills, they kept doing it. The rules didn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
It just made it tougher for the good people. You say, for example, hair braiders in Washington, D.C. came from Africa, started braiding people's hair. You'd think the politicians would say, what a great business. One couple was so good at it, they soon had 12 employees. People came from miles around to get their hair braided. They tried to put them out of business, Washington did, because they didn't have a cosmetology license. Because there was a whole empire of bureaucracy that said you had to pay thousands of dollars, take 120 hours in courses in shampooing before you could operate a hair braiding salon. They didn't even shampoo hair.
But that was local, wasn't it? That wasn't federal. That was local. I mean, we have hair braiders in Jersey. You got to get a license. You pay $25-$30. Washington is not typical.
Why do you have to get any license to braid hair? Why do you have to get license?
People could be hurt, man.
Yeah, people could be hurt.
There have been some hair braiding strangulations.
Did you ever see Malcolm X? when they put that stuff in his hair and it drove him crazy?
Tragic.
Well, on the federal level, there's equal nonsense. It's everywhere.
Actually, you've been very good at you know, exposing any kind of hucksterism and cheating and scams, whether it's been, you know, consumers, for on behalf of consumers, whether it's been business or government. What's your view on the scam of the Bush administration and in terms of 9/11, and how would you go about exposing lies that you think we might have been told over that?
Well, if that were my beat, I would have something to say about it. But
yeah.
I like to mouth off about what I really studied and know about, and Iraq and all that is not one of those things.
And I feel as a consumer that I, the federal government or the administration is, you know, kind of like a consumer product, and I'm not sure I'm getting my money's worth right now.
Well, we rarely get our money's worth from government. Government squanders your money, and I'm sure it's squandering plenty of money in the military. But we need a military, and it's not something that I have gone to Iraq and looked at personally, so I don't want to speculate about it.
You're a libertarian, right?
Yes.
So will you explain the basic tenets of libertarianism to me so I understand them? Is it basically that, you know, everybody gets to have all of their stuff all the time? There are no taxes. There's no military. You hire your own little private police force, and you just try to keep the drug addicts out of your yard because you've legalized drugs.
Well, that would be a little closer to anarchy, so I would say no.
Yay!
Yes.
Libertarianism is a terrible word. People think it means libertine.
Yeah.
But yes, libertarian is what the founders believed, that we need government, but limited government. We need government to keep the peace, to protect you from
the
shooting
poor people.
You or taking your money,
yeah.
to pass some pollution rules,
uh-huh.
to do a few things, enforce contracts.
Right.
Otherwise, free people should be left alone to do what they want.
What about the poor?
Well, the poor should be helped by private charity and each other. Like, we used to have thousands of mutual aid societies.
So you're saying, here's a dollar, good luck with it?
I'm comfortable with government having a safety net, but it ought to be a small enough safety net that private charities can compete with it, because government sucks.
Do you believe in privatizing charities?
Well, see, the United Way competes pretty well, doesn't it?
Sometimes. It's also a bloated bureaucracy, but charity will do
it. But it's private.
Yeah, well, the United Way largely does some wonderful things.
Now, when you say you're a libertarian, you want to limit the role of government, does that mean that you're for gay marriage?
I think it should be allowed, yeah.
Okay.
This is what's also funny, Mark, in that I'm called that conservative at ABC.
No, I'm just curious. I'm asking.
Right, but I'm just, in general, Eric Alderman wrote a book calling me that. It's proof there's no liberal media. Look at Stossel's. Conservative. And yet, I was not for this invasion of Iraq. I think homosexuality is perfectly natural. I think drugs should be legal.
What about Social Security? What kind of drugs? All drugs?
You think all drugs. I think it's hypocritical. I mean, they're going to be inventing designer drugs faster than America can make them illegal. The regulation does more harm than the law.
But don't you think drugs will lead to crime whether or not they're legal or not?
No, I think the law causes the crime.
How is that possible? I mean, do you know the fundamental ideas of addiction, that people can't really help themselves if they have the disease of addiction? How do you treat that?
What utter garbage.
You think it's really
utter
garbage?
Garbage. Look at the numbers.
So you think that it's sort of like, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, it's not a physical or psychological ailment?
No, it can be a very physical ailment, but most people quit on their own.
And most people don't
try crack even.
Yeah.
And they are able to quit. If you look at the numbers of people who've smoked,
so let me just get
smoke
this.
Now,
what I told
most
you, man,
people
rehab
quit on
is
their
for
own.
Girls.
No, rehab isn't for girls, because the idea is, if you legalize drugs, the people that are really serious about drug use will eventually die, and they'll be out of the way, and the people that know how to have a good time will be allowed to have a good time.
Well, that's pretty cynical, but I would argue that a certain percentage of Americans are going to abuse drugs, regardless of what the law is.
Right.
And the law is killing people.
How?
The law causes the crime. The sellers arm themselves and form gangs because they can't rely on the police to protect their property.
But
the sellers steal to buy the stuff.
If you legalize drugs, wouldn't there be some government regulation about, you know, the quality of the drugs, or how the drugs are distributed, or how they are taxed possibly? You can't just legalize it blindly.
I would.
How is that possible? Where would it be sold? You mean in a toy store? Or?
Well, no, you're right. We should have. We're talking about. I'm talking about consenting adults here.
Okay,
so
having
rules to protect children. But I think once you're an adult, you ought to be able to do with your body what you want. Rent it to another person if you want to be a prostitute, or poison yourself if you want to take drugs.
But how big is this small government, or how? At what point can you say that is the right size of government to be regulating all of this? Because you've said that you don't want anarchy, and you clearly are against big government. I don't understand how you figure this out.
He's going to his personal Bible, his book.
He's going to his own book, folks.
And it's a very good question. I wish people asked this more often. Because
doesn't it have to adapt? I mean, surely it's sort of like regulating sort of up and down on anything that it's like making a cake in a way. Sometimes you realize you had to have more sugar, sometimes it needed more flour. It doesn't seem as though that you can have a sort of one answer fits every situation. From year to year, society changes, things move on. I don't understand how you can be flexible on this, because you sound quite rigid.
Well, you make two points. It's the market that's much more flexible than government. The market changes every second. You have to adjust your programming if people stop listening. Government changes once every 4 years. But if you look at this chart on page 131, it shows that for most of the history of America, government was tiny, less than 5% of the economy. It's only in recent years that the line shoots straight up to the 40% it is now.
But just
I'd be happy if they bring it back to 20%. It doesn't have to be nothing. 20% of the economy is still hundreds of billions of dollars. That's not enough.
Have you thought much about what agencies should go and what agencies should stay within government?
I thought some about it, sure.
Which one should go? FDA?
The Agriculture Department, the FDA. It's never going to happen, but do you want to take them one at a time?
Because yeah, let's
sounds
take them one
so,
at a time. I'm
so radical. It sounds like the FDA and let these horrible capitalists, these snake oil sellers.
We're intolerant people.
Yeah,
it's
kind
we
of
want
weird.
To know.
That's a
we're
question.
Curious.
It's a weird question. I don't understand how this sort of free market idea of everything will eventually find its level. I don't see how the free market or deregulation or privatization has led to anything but greed and exploitation of people. I don't see there's any indication.
Hold that thought. Okay? You hold your thought. We're going to come back with Marin, Ellicott, Riley, Stossel, and you on the telephones at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270 when Air America Radio continues.
Air America Radio.
Well, those old tax forms can wait a while.
Because tax cuts are for sissies.
Wow, that's some uplifting, weird,
I like that.
Hypnotic
libertarian music.
It is now 46 minutes past before past. No, it's actually 14 minutes before the hour, and we're back with ABC's John Stossel in the studio. He's the author of "Give Me a Break" and a self-professed liberal scourge. So I'm not feeling that.
Scourge. Well, actually, it's a good thing. I don't understand why.
Wait. We're taking your calls for John at 866-303-AAR0. That dial the zero. 866-303-2270. And it's scourge. And I know how to read. Now, John, what I was talking about before is deregulation and privatization and this idea that free market will make everything level and everybody will be happy in this great world of capitalism.
Well,
I don't
making this up. I didn't say make everything level.
No. Okay. I'm just talking about how people who believe in the free market believe that encouraging competition on that level will eventually, make it better than government.
Yes.
Okay. But I don't see any indication of that. I see that usually that leads to human exploitation and products getting worse in their quality and authenticity. And I see that countries crumble because of it.
You're living in an alternate universe.
The countries that crumble
are the socialist countries. And the capitalism has lifted more people out of the mud and misery of poverty than any system ever.
How far has it lifted them? Do they still have mud on them? Do they still
from
live
third
in mud?
World to first world? From dying, one of your crazy callers earlier was talking about we're all dying earlier, we're all poorer than ever. The opposite is true. In free market countries, we're living longer than ever. We're wealthier than ever. We
Americans
have more
are fatter
choices.
Than ever.
Americans are fatter than ever. Capitalism is and freedom allows us to make gross choices too.
But you don't think that on some level it is exploitive in terms of manufacturing when things are moved to other countries or that, when Americans are put out of work? How does that, play into the big model in your head?
Well, there are only two ways to do things, either forced or voluntary. And I think voluntary is better, and capitalism is voluntary. The people who get really rich get rich by giving us stuff we want. Bill Gates gave us software we wanted.
But don't you think that advertising is coercive on some level?
No. Government is coercive.
Really?
Coercion
do you think
is
that
force?
Do you think that having like Snapple machines in second grade cafeterias and forcing kids to develop brand connections at the age of four, you don't think that's coercive?
I think it's a bad idea, but no. Lawyers and government get to use force. That's coercive.
All right.
Guys, we have Charles in Maryland who's waiting to talk to us.
Charles,
I have a question. But do you have a question for John Stossel, please?
Yes. If you favor adults using drugs, that implies some sort of regulation that children don't. But what I really want to know is, if you legalize consumption of drugs for consenting adults, would you agree to tax them? I mean, here's a source of tax revenue. That's kind of interesting.
Good question. Thanks a lot, Charles.
All right,
John.
Thank you for the call.
I think you could make that argument. If the taxes are too high, you again create a black market. But you want to tax
them? But then wouldn't you create some sort of bloated tax, say, you know, drug tax bureaucracy?
Probably, but we need some taxes, and if you have simple low taxes, that funds the government without creating black markets.
Would you get rid of the FCC?
Yes.
You would get rid of the FCC. Do you think that the kinds of things that are going on in the wake of Breastgate are...
Breastgate.
The wake of what?
Breastgate, Nipplegate, whatever you want to call it. Janet Jackson. Whether it be Howard Stern and some of the things that he's faced, or the elimination of the Victoria's Secret model runway show. Are these areas that government should not intrude on? Should people be able to broadcast anything they want, anytime they want, to whomever they want?
That's a tough one, too. Part of the problem is that the government just gave us the airwaves, should have auctioned off the airwaves. And I would say people ought to be able to broadcast anything they want if the customer subscribes to them. I mean, Bubba the Love Sponge doing Alvin the Chipmunk porno routines is inviting children in, and I could see that the government has a role to protect people from that.
Okay, we have Doris in Delaware has a question for John Stossel.
Yes, John, I want to ask you a question. You're for doing away with all this government, but if you do that, you were a consumer advocate for years. Who's going to protect the consumer?
That's what I accuse my hosts here of not getting, and that's what it took me 20 years to...
Well, then
so
don't,
I wrote
don't accuse us if it took you 20 years.
Yeah, right.
Lay it down in a few minutes, bro.
Yeah, right.
But the ruthless competition of the free market protects us, because that's what it took me too long to see, that the cheaters get caught eventually. I was having trouble finding huge scams to do as a national reporter in 2020. The good companies thrive, the bad ones atrophy. Competition protects people.
But I don't know,
wait,
John.
What about
one thing I don't agree with, just basically on that one kind of issue, that ruthless competition, is that if I'm driving around some small town in America and I'm hungry and all I can eat is at McDonald's and Burger King and Chi-Chi's and somewhere else and somewhere else and somewhere else, and I'm just so desperate for something nutritious I have to go and buy chocolate milk, that is not working. It's taken actually decades for consumers to fight back and actually force McDonald's to start putting healthy stuff on the menu.
So go to the supermarket and buy your own food. Nobody's forcing you to go to McDonald's.
Here's my question.
Why shouldn't somebody kind of step in and say, look, you know, you shouldn't be advertising this, you know, rubbishy food to kids. You shouldn't be encouraging people to eat kind of like high-fat, kind of unhealthy stuff that clogs up your arteries.
Because if government's big enough to step in and do that, it's big enough to call this sedition and take you off the air or lock you up. We want a small government.
I don't believe that. I think that's an exaggeration.
I have a reasonable question. Is that what you're saying is true about free market and competition? You have brand names that have been around for years. My example is that I understand what you're saying, but many brands that have become relied upon as being authentic and, you know, good products, you know, eventually try to cut their costs, and they no longer are reliable, and they
like,
no longer, like Cole Haan shoes.
I've heard of this.
Cole Haan used to make a good loafer, you know, and I don't wear loafers, you know, but you know, I bought a pair of shoes that I believe were going to be good, but they were made somewhere else very cheaply, and they were bad. And this was a good company. How do you stop that from happening?
Well, if enough people do
I know
that, and you talk about it, then they'll go out of business. They'll go to another supplier. Perfection isn't one of the choices. I'm just saying that freedom is the best choice.
Okay, guys, we have Ray in New Jersey with a question for John Stossel.
Hi. I wish we had freedom. I mean, when I deal with, we're down to two telephone companies trying to deal with their bureaucracy.
It's bad ones.
Is exactly. It's worse than the bureaucracy of the government. At least with the government, you have a choice. By the time you're down to two global quantities who you can have no effect of, over, and who probably the government can't even, and you said that Bill Gates brought us good software, he killed a lot of the innovation in the industry, and he did it through cheating and lying.
Okay,
he
quick question for John Ray.
I'm sorry.
What's your question?
The question is, how can you say that that government is worse than these total bureaucracies who cheat and steal in order to retain power?
Because I don't think the phone companies are doing that. I think you have more choices than two, but you only have one government. The phone companies also can't use force.
I had better service when the government was in charge of the phones. Man, I went through something with Verizon, buddy. I don't know. Can you call them or something? Can you help me out? I mean, it took me 2 weeks to get the thing hooked up properly because the bureaucracy was so mired.
I hate that, too. And if they don't fix it, then the company that has less bureaucracy will clean
But they're a monopoly.
Product.
I mean, aren't they?
Verizon's not a monopoly.
Don't they own the lines?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They're forced to sell them to other people.
Sprint, we've got
no, no, but they rent the lines out. They rent the lines
out. Well, wait a minute. See, there's a problem here because you're talking about hard lines, you're talking about cell phones. Two different things. Verizon has hard lines.
God, there's no way we can solve this.
Such a boring subject, too.
There's no way we can solve this in 5 minutes.
You sure?
John, I so badly don't want to like you. But I find that, you know, you're speaking in a way that I find, you know, hypnotic. Not necessarily convincing, but I don't have the energy. But I do like this part of your book where, you know, you actually, your wife doesn't
Give
like
me
you
a break
either. Does your wife not like you? Did you throw
I
cake at your wife?
Me.
Did you throw cake at your wife in public?
Well, wow.
Where I live on the Upper West Side, to believe in free markets and to say that the welfare state is a problem is to be evil.
I thought you were going to say, well, I live on the Upper West Side, throwing cake at one's wife is acceptable.
Is acceptable, right?
I was at a party.
Is that liberal, folks, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan?
All the liberals were shrieking at me, and she joined in, and that upset me so much. That
threw cake at her. So that, I think that is sort of like the core of the libertarian belief is I want what I want now. I want to be the best that it is. I want to have all the freedom to have everything I want, and I should be wearing gold diapers, because I'm a big baby, and I'm going to throw cake at my wife because she said something I didn't like.
It got her attention.
And everybody else's.
We have to find out how a liberal and a libertarian hooked up in the first place, but we've got something.
Okay, yeah, is it coming in yet? Is the facts coming in? There it is, right on time. Now it's time for us to broadcast our much-feared liberal agenda. As you know, our philosophical leader, Ms. Barbara Streisand, gives us the daily rundown of all the important liberal causes. We're still, here it is. It is. I got the facts. Go to the Passion of Christ, yell, "This isn't hell, boy!" Trade in Palestinian scars for those cool Iraqi insurgent ones. Go to Tim Robbins' play Embedded as many times as it is advertised on Air America. Write folk song for Iraqi uprising. Find rhymes for Najaf. Pre-order Bill Clinton memoir to get his Amazon ranking higher. Order another Hillary Clinton memoir to keep her ahead of Sean Hannity's book. Go to Ashcroft Testimony Live. Keep coughing in the hand. Or a liar. Those are the marching orders. Do what you got to do, liberals right across the country. Thank you, John, for hanging out.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Give Me a Break, it's called. The book is called Give Me a Break, How I Exposed Hucksters, Cheats, and Scam Artists and Became the Scourge of the liberal media.
Except he's not the scourge, because we had him on.
That's right. Yeah, it was a nice time.
So he has to change his title now. How I Exposed Hucksters, Cheats, and Scam Artists.
I got to go do some
research. Wait a minute, isn't 2020 a part of the liberal media?
Yes, and God bless ABC. I can't complain too much. They have me on. They believe
you're
other players.
The scourge of almost all the liberal media.
This scourge thing. You're just exaggerating, aren't you, John?
It's hyperbole, but I used to.
Yeah.
You know,
is that the same as hype? Is that what
that's it.
Hype. Now I get scorned.
Well, listen, thanks a lot for being with us. Join us tomorrow on Air America Radio when we'll have all the reaction to the September 11th testimony of Attorney General John Ashcroft. That's tomorrow's morning's edition. Here on Air America Radio.
Now, he's the real scourge of the liberal media.
Absolutely.
John Ashcroft.
Bye.
See ya.